London's LBC 97.3. 0870 90 90 973.
Nick Abbott.
I'm listening, dear. You can talk to me.
Ian's not here.
Oh, no.
He's on a plane going to Los Angeles, one of the ugliest, smelliest, dirtiest, most dangerous places in the whole wide world. Helen and Chris are here. Why is he going? This is, it's almost beyond belief, really. Go on.
I think it's something to do with Sky.
You think?
I think so.
Oh, come on, stop pretending. You know exactly why he's going.
All right,
you sound like you're talking with your head in a bucket, by the way.
Am I? It's probably my headphones. Sky One.
Oh, that's better. Sky One. He's going to Sky One to talk about Lost.
What?
Yeah. I have some questions about Lost.
Have you been watching it?
Well, been watching is perhaps a little strong. Used to watch with an increasing bewilderment with each episode. Mostly wondering, why is this on? And as I get older in life, I start to become less and less... I'll put up with less and less. Now, if a programme doesn't amuse me in about the first 5 minutes, I'll just switch it over, whereas before I would watch the whole thing. But I made an exception with Lost because the first episode was so properly brilliant. They spent, like, £10 million. It was famously the most expensive TV programme that had ever been made. And, you know, the plane crashed and explosions and the whole thing. It was great. And you thought, wow, this is tremendous. And there's a great big prehistoric monster in the... Did anybody ever find out what that was?
No, we're still waiting for
that. Right, still waiting. Okay, good. Only 50, only what, 50, 100 episodes in, something like that, and nothing's happened yet.
So you've given up completely?
Well, what I did was, and I still am a bit surprised that I managed to persuade myself to do this, was on the episode before the end of the first series...
Right.
When I'd read in the newspaper that people in America had started the second series with one of the biggest audiences ever recorded for American TV, I thought, right, what they've done is they've given us such a gigantic cliffhanger at the end of Series 1 that people are out of their minds to know what's going to happen at the beginning of Series 2. Hmm. But with 24 episodes having already gone, well, I guess it's 20... an American season is 24 episodes, right?
Yeah.
So that would be 22... Having seen 22 episodes and nothing having happened, I thought, right, that's it. I've finished. It's over. Before the cliffhanger episode, I'll give up now.
That's very strong of you.
Very strong. I thought that was quite impressive, really, because I would be still hooked to that now if I hadn't have made that stand. And you know what? I don't miss it at all. So here would be my first question. My first question would be, and my second question would be, is anything ever going to happen? I love that that Sky, was it Sky, or I think it was just, was it Sky One, Helen, that that bought bought that thing for £1 million, or entirely too much money? They wrested it away
the
from
Lost.
Channel 4. Yeah.
I don't watch telly except Dog Borstal.
Except?
Dog Borstal.
Dog Borstal.
Mm.
Okay. What's that then?
It's dogs going to Borstal.
Hence the name?
Dog Borstal.
Right. Dogs going to Borstal. I actually passed Battersea Dogs Home, which is actually now Battersea Dog and Cats Home. You wouldn't think that the two would marry well.
No.
But it looks more like a prison than a dog's home. You'd think it would be...
It's kind of a prison. It's a really good series, but that's the only telly I watch. So The Lost thing, I bailed out in episode 9.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
Much smarter than me.
Yeah.
In fact, by a factor of almost 2.
Yeah, double.
So, right. Hey, Jeanette, are you hungry? Are you peckish? Are you feeling peckish right now? The answer is yes. And do you know why? The exact time of day when your willpower will run out has been pinpointed by researchers. You know what time that is? 3:09. Right now. This second. People are more hungry now than at any other time during the day. And she's reaching for a bag.
That's rubbish.
No, it's down here in black and white. Were you kidding? It's in the newspaper. Rubbish. An actual research has been carried out. At precisely 3:09, weight-watching Londoners will feel the need to start snacking on comfort food. What have you got, Helen?
Banana.
I guess that's comfort food. Bananas have some sort of drug in them that make you,
potassium.
Yeah. That make you do what? Chill out, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very relaxed. Groovy. The survey of more than 2,000 people showed that 50% of workers start grazing at 3:09 right now out of boredom. That's nice. Keep eating, Alan. Copycat eating is an issue for 1 in 7 people. For the mere sight of someone else snacking is enough to make them tuck in too. Feeling peckish, Chris?
A little bit.
Stress plays a part in creating cravings as well. 31% of women said they reached for...
Apple?
No.
Apple?
Chocolate.
Have you ever met a woman? Apple?
Chocolate, isn't
Chocolate. No, apple. Chocolate, yeah. 17% of men also reach for the chocolate. Dr. David from the BBC's Watchdog Health Check, whatever that is, said, we've experienced mindless munching, that's eating when we're not hungry or we're just eating out of boredom, grazing like a cow. But there are steps we can take to manage the urge to eat at 3:09. Oh, it's gone now. 3:10. Not quite so hungry anymore, eh? There are steps that you can take to... And this is where it gets suspicious. Because it says that the step that you can take to manage the urge to eat is to chew sugar-free gum. Guess who carried out the survey? That's right. Wrigley's.
Wrigley's.
And you know why they carried out the survey? So that they would get people like me to say Wrigley's on the air. Don't you feel used and abused?
Yes.
Just a little bit, yeah. Here's our first one in Leighton. Hello, Graham.
Oh, good afternoon, Nick.
Graham.
Hi there. Oh, yeah, before I tell you what I rung up to say, I realised I meant to ask you on a Saturday night, what's that music called to start the show?
I think it's called Bumble Boogie Woogie or something like that. It's Liberace.
Oh, Liberace.
Liberace.
Are you very sure you're not homosexual?
Liberace himself, yeah.
Oh, it's rather put me off it. No, it's a good bit of music, actually. yeah, I was going to say Lost. I've never seen it, but I know a few people who do.
Right, that's like saying that I'm not gay myself, but some of my best friends are.
Are you trying to tell me something?
No.
Oh, okay, right, well, you can unburden yourself on me. No, it's just, I wonder whether they started Lost with the intention of perhaps giving some sort of meaning at the end. But a similar thing the BBC have done lately is the programme Life on Mars. I don't know whether you saw that.
Well, there's another one that I bailed out of because I really wanted to like that programme because yeah. I was a teenager around the time that programme was about. And, you know, I like all these references to Blakey's and the music that they came out with and, you know, Sherbet Dip Dabs and all of that stuff.
But we were hoping for some kind of answer towards the end.
Yes.
But I think they may have changed the original ending when they realised it's going to be popular. And they might get another couple of series out of it.
I get the feeling that they just started and not having any plan. They just, it became obvious to me.
In which case it just turns into another sort of run-of-the-mill drama that they're going to have to invent a plot for every week.
Yeah, exactly.
They can't do one series and tie it all up anymore. They have to string it out.
They don't have a plan, I'm certain of it.
At least the BBC won't stick it on Sky.
The BBC won't stick it on Sky?
Well, Lost has been bought by Sky now. It's originally shown on...
Oh, I see. The BBC won't stick it on.
No.
Comma.
Sky.
Sky will.
Yeah.
Right.
Rearrange those words into a sentence.
Into a sentence that makes sense in the English language. Yeah. I think we did that, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Cheers, Graham.
That's it. Have a good show.
Ta-ta. So, are you watching Lost in there? Because I know that Ian loves it.
Yeah, I'm on season 3.
This must be his dream job. He's gone to LA to interview the cast of Lost about... Where the plot got lost.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm on season 3 already.
I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Are we on season 3 or are you ahead of us? You're watching it on YouTube?
I'm ahead of most people, I think.
Oh, well, get you.
I know. I got a cousin that's kind of sending me copies from the States.
Oh, right, well, that's illegal, of course. Yes.
Right.
You're going to jail.
Right. But... If it means I get to see the third season of Lost, it's worth it for that, isn't it?
Is it? Honest. Is it?
You should go back to it. I really recommend you should go back to it.
No, I'm not going
to
do it. It's an hour out of my week, and you'll never get it back. I mean, I'd rather look out the window.
Really?
Yeah, it's more calming.
Okay. Well, whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, be honest now. Nothing's happened yet, right? That's a no.
Well, at the start of every series, they answer a load of questions from the last series, but set up a whole load of new ones.
Right, so it's a no.
Pretty much.
Yeah, okay. Just checking. Right. This is LBC 97.3. I'm Nick Abbott in for Ian, and we'll have travel now with Alan Joyce.
Thanks, Nick. We're looking at delays still on the southbound side of the...
So he's going there and doing this thing for Sky. He's going... Ian Lee is going to LA for Sky, and he's going to be back on... So he's going today, and he's going to be back on Sunday. That's a heck of a long way to go, isn't it? Do they not have phones?
Yeah, but he can't get jet lag. He's not there long enough.
No, I suppose so, but he could get a brain tumour by being in the air for that period of time. Are they sending him first class?
Business. Is that full down beds?
Well, I don't know. I've no idea. I've only ever got on a plane and turned left once, and that was when I was working for the for a radio station that also has the same name as an airline.
Really?
And yeah, and the top man intervened on my behalf. That's what they said behind the desk. And I was thrilled beyond measure, except when they put on my luggage business class, whatever the premier or premium, or they have some sort of funny name, you know, the airline that begins with
five
V.
Star.
And I said to because I was crestfallen, because I thought, you know, they'd put a call in saying, please, I'm one of your DJs, can I get an upgrade? And the word came back, yes, message from the office has gone through, you'll be sorted. And so I went to the desk and they put a business class ticket on my luggage. And I thought, oh no, just one of those slightly wider seats with slightly more leg room. And I said, what would it take, you know, being cheeky? I thought I might as well try it on, because otherwise I'm going to be sitting, you know, in an uncomfortable position for 15 hours or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And they said, what would it take, I said, to get upgraded all the way? You know, thinking sexual favours or anything, really.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, no, don't worry, you are. We've just run out of first-class tickets for bags. Ding! Oh, hurrah! No. Have you ever been on a plane and turned left?
Never.
Unless money meant nothing to you or somebody else was paying for it, you'd be crazy to...
Do you get silver service in first class?
What, with... No.
Oh.
Silver service.
Why did you get, like, proper knives and forks in first class?
Oh, you mean actually eating with silver?
Yes.
That's not silver service.
Oh.
My impression of understanding what silver service is butlers in, you know, tailcoats and, you know, the full-on bit, which would be difficult to do in a plane.
Well...
No, what you get is crappy food served on a proper plate.
Okay. With a proper knife and fork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although post 9/11, I don't know that's possible anymore. You still probably get it's probably just a nicer quality of plastic.
Yeah, silver plastic.
Yeah, silver coloured plastic. Yeah, you're right. So it is silver service. Yeah. No, but what you get is aeroplane food. There's no getting around it. It's never going to be nice.
I'm actually a fan of aeroplane food.
What?
I don't know. It's just. It's all little packaged.
Oh, you
very
like it?
Nicely.
Yeah. Compartmentalised.
Yeah.
Would you like it chopped up like baby food?
Well, it pretty much is, isn't it?
No.
Oh.
It could be blended for you. You could put in a request.
Oh.
Blended for you. You could drink it through a straw.
But I can eat. You know, I can polish one of those off, and I usually polish off my girlfriend's meal as well. She doesn't like it at all.
Reheated chicken bits.
Yes.
With a roll. That comes as bread that you'd never see outside of a plane. That kind of foamy, or almost like a sponge type of bread. You never see it in any other shop. It's unavailable to anyone but someone sitting on a plane, that kind of bread, am I right?
Well, it is about a day old, though, isn't it? Because they prepare it the day before, don't they?
Well, that seems a bit of a slur on the airline catering industry. I'm sure it's as fresh as the day it was baked.
I'm not mentioning any names.
Here is, Philip in South Norwood.
Good afternoon, Nick.
How are you, Philip?
The only time I was put up into business, I was upgraded. There was a bed, yes.
A fully flat bed?
Fully, well, yes, I'd call it a bed, yes. I was surprised. They told me to tick it up, because I was going to get on the plane, said, you don't want that one. And they gave me another boarding ticket and found myself in business.
And there's no getting around it, whether you're receiving... posh food on a nice plate with silver knife and fork, and you're lying down on a flatbed, there's just no way around the fact that you're in an uncomfortable, loud, metal tube screaming through the air at 30,000 feet off the ground.
I agree with you, and just before I make my main point, Nick, I've had china, knives and forks on charter. There used to be a charter airline no longer flying, called World Air. And I travelled with them several times and used to get china plates and proper knives and forks.
Well, yeah, that, what was that, back in the 50s? When flying was an extravagant thing to
late
do.
Late 60s, yeah. And it was incredible, you know, everybody used to say about it, you know, that people didn't believe that you actually got it. It was a one class plane, so everybody was in the same boat, if you pardon the expression.
Hey, Philip, do you follow me around, or do you call every single show on the radio?
No, if I just happen to be around and the radio's on, I'll.
Because
well, it's something I want to... I agree with you, Nick. We agree for the first time.
Oh, no.
Lost is a load of rubbish.
Yeah, it is. What do you mean, for the first time?
Oh, well, I don't know. Have you agreed before about anything?
Well, I don't keep notes, but you're always calling me in. And you know what, Philip? You're always good value for money. I call you Mr. Lister, because you've always got a list.
The reason about Lost was I saw it in the States before it was shown here. I saw about two or three episodes. I thought, well, yeah, like you, I thought this is going to be a great series, great premise. But it just lost its way. The characters were uninteresting. You just didn't care about them.
No, that's a good point, yeah. And you have to care about the people that if you're going to give an hour of yourself over every week, you have to actually care about whether they live or die.
I can't think of one of the characters that I thought, and I want to find out about them.
And is the fat guy still, has he not lost any weight yet? I mean, he's surviving on grubs and fresh water.
Well, I must be honest, I occasionally dip in, if it's on and there's nothing else on, I'll have a quick peek to see what's happening. But I just wonder how they're ever going to end it, because...
I think it'll just peter out. I think that people will stop watching it, and as the audience drifts down, they just won't get it renewed.
Well, I don't know, do you remember a series many years ago, Nick, called St. Elsewhere, which was about a hospital?
No.
It was a very, very good series. And the way they ended that was incredible. People still, you know, who watched it talk about it to this day. It turned out it was the dreams of a young autistic boy about his father.
Oh, come on.
Honestly, it sounds crazy.
And then Bobby steps out of the shower?
No. If you've ever seen the series, if anybody's ever seen St. Elsewhere, we'll tell you, it was... You cared about the people, you were interested in the people, the stories were really, really...
That just sounds like something they did as a joke, though.
It wasn't done as a silly... Maybe I'm not explaining it very well, but the ending, when you saw it, made sense. I know it sounds crazy to say it, but it did. What other series do you dislike, or you don't like?
Well, it'd be easier to say the ones that I do like, because the amount of programmes I don't watch, the list would go on forever. 24 is really good, and The Sopranos, but that was a bit disappointing last night. It was like, what was that about? It was an hour and 10 minutes, and nothing actually happened.
There's one programme that I do never miss every week. Have you ever seen Da Vinci's Inquest?
I've never even heard of it.
It's on the channel FTN. I never know what that stands for. It's a Canadian series. It's finished in Canada, but we're on series 5. And it's a drama series about the Vancouver coroner. And
is this obsession with coroners?
No, but, yeah, I agree with you. I know what you're saying. But this has won every award going in Canada.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, don't laugh. It really is good. Even the critics here, whenever a new series comes on, they always give it a big, you know, big spread in the paper.
Yeah, I doubt that, Philip. No one has ever heard of it.
The Times and... The Mail, and they all, you know, give it a good write-up.
Okay.
Give it a watch, Nick, and I'd be interested to know what you think of it.
I absolutely will not do that.
Oh, dear.
Thanks for the offer, Phil.
I think with Ian, Nick, is that he's not gone to interview the cast. I think when he gets to Los Angeles, they're going to put him on a plane, fly him to Hawaii, give him a parachute, and land him on the island, and he's joining the cast for the next series.
Well, that's something to watch out for. All right, cheers for that.
Okay, Nick.
Ta-da. Here's Kingston. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Nick. You all right?
I'm all right.
Yeah, I was just calling out to basically defend Lost, because I think it's a really good series. And also, I've seen Da Vinci's Inquest, and I didn't think much of it.
Sorry. All right, well, go on, defend it then.
Lost. Well, for a start, it's just a great series, and the storyline is... you never really know where it's going.
But it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, but there's so many twists and turns and stuff, and if you're actually sort of an avid watcher, it's sort of just like...
Well, I was, though. I mean, I didn't just watch one and then give up. I watched it for almost an entire series, like 23 episodes, and the amount of episodes that would end, and you'd think... I mean, I went through this quite a lot. I thought, right, I'm never going to watch this again. And then the next week would come around and go, oh, all right, just one more. And then it would end and nothing had happened. I thought, right, that's it. I'm finished.
Yeah.
And eventually I had to, because I thought if I watch the final cliffhanger episode of series one, then I'm going to be hooked on series two. So I made, it was almost like going cold turkey. I stopped taking heroin right there.
Yeah, but I mean, another thing that I think is quite good about Lost and 24, which you said that you liked, is that they're not afraid to kill off main characters.
Right.
Which is always a shock. But I mean, it's just such a popular show at the moment, and you know, it's I mean, what you're saying about parts of the plot, like Hurley, surviving on grubs, but he's still not lost any weight or anything. They've found food and stuff.
Oh, great. Okay, well, listen, thanks a lot, Tom, and I'm still not going to watch it. This is LBC.
£50,000.
A 1 million...
I'm listening, dear. You can talk to me.
South Mims. Hello, Jackie.
Hello.
Jackie.
You'll inform me this afternoon. I've lived a whole life thinking that Silver Surface was exactly what Chris suggested it was. I really thought that's what it was.
What, just eating with silver?
Well, you know, sort of something a bit more, you know, not plastic knives and forks, you know, a silver service meaning something, you know.
Something more refined?
I think a bit more refined, you know.
Yeah. No, I think silver service, isn't that what the Queen would normally be used to? It's people, you know, faffing around in frock coats. You know, having eight knives on the table, that sort of thing.
But then I suppose they do have silver knives and forks there.
Well, yeah, I mean, she may eat out of Tupperware, but I'm sure she doesn't eat on a plastic spoon. Yeah. No, it's the whole show of it, isn't it? It's, you know, it's what you get in the fine dining.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I've learned something today. God, you know.
I'm being very vague because I don't I know exactly what constitutes silver service, but I think that's more or less what
well,
it is, you know.
That's one of the discerning listeners will phone
yeah,
in.
Yeah, sure they will. Look, if you went over to, you know, have dinner with the Queen... Then yeah. That's probably what you'd get. Silver
well, I would
service.
Expect it.
More people swanning around the table working on it than people actually sitting down eating.
Yes, that's similar to what I thought. I just thought it was eating with you know silver knives and forks. Literally.
Well, that's part of it, Jackie. But I don't think that's the whole thing.
All right. Okay then.
All right.
All right.
Cheers.
Bye.
Here is Hammersmith. Hello, Jonathan.
Oh, hello, Nick.
Jonathan.
A couple of things. It's, about Lost, I just heard that chap saying earlier on that it's a popular series. Well, I thought Channel 4 got rid of it because the ratings were going down.
I think that they probably didn't put up much of a fight, yeah. As soon as any programme switches channels, you have to be very suspicious.
Yeah, I read in the paper somewhere it was losing ratings. I watched the first one and I've struggled with that, so I haven't watched it since.
Because they have all the money in the world to spend on this kind of thing, because they've just upped the amount that they spent on Big Brother. I think they doubled it. You know, Endemol, the people who make Big Brother, I think it used to cost £40 million, £35 million, something like that a year for that. Can you believe it?
Hey, you're joking.
No. Well, you know, it's Channel 4's, it's their cash cow. It's how they make all of their money with Big Brother. It's such a draw that Endemol said, right, well, this time we want... £70 million.
Oh, right.
Otherwise, we'll give it to ITV. Oh. And there's no way that that Channel 4 were going to lose that because, you know, they're not making any money with anything else.
No, that's the point.
So Lost isn't doing it for them, otherwise they would never have let it go.
No, exactly. And it wasn't doing it for me, certainly. The other thing was you were talking about Silver Service. I was trained at catering college and I used to work... in the airline industry, in catering, but not on the aircraft. And silver service is when the food is served onto the plate at your table. So the food is served to you, and that silver service is how you serve. So yes, you do have silverware, but it's served on your plate, on the table.
Well, so in other words, it comes underneath a dome.
That's right, and then they serve it onto your plate. And they did used to do that years ago on various different airlines, and one that Phil mentioned, which have now aren't around anymore, so they can be mentioned, was Ward Air were well known for being a charter line that used full silver service to all their passengers. They had just had one class.
It seems a bit of a waste, doesn't it? Because it's like, that's twice as many dishes to wash up.
Yeah, it is, but it's also the weight. It costs loads of fuel. The weight of the trolleys that go onto the aircraft, that's what I used to do, load the trolleys on. And the weight of the trolleys, you wouldn't believe, that go on for first class. They must burn up so much fuel just for your knives and forks, seriously.
And so did you have anything to do with the actual food itself?
No, I didn't. I didn't go into catering in that way. I ended up leaving home, becoming a truck driver, and I used to load the aircraft with their catering. And I used to see it, eat it, and I did travel first class a couple of times because I worked there, and I've travelled club 4 times in first class, so I would never pay for it, never.
No, it would seem crazy, because what you're getting is a relatively comfortable chair for 12 hours for £5,000, which is insane.
It's roughly the same food. Club and first are roughly the same, but they do add little bits of extra with first class, but it is roughly the same, except they put it on a plate and give you a knife and fork, whereas in club you get it in a little tray.
Yeah.
And then when you're in the back, you get it in a plastic piece.
Yours for only £3,000 more. Yeah,
£6,000 to go. I think it's £6,000 to go to New York first class return, or maybe that's one way, but it's something like that. It's ridiculous.
I think there's no one in first class that's actually paying for themselves. They're all people who are on press junkets. They'll be, if a star is in first class, they almost guarantee they haven't paid for it themselves, because they'll be advertising a movie or doing some sort of press thing.
Yeah.
And it's the company that's picking up the bill. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember a millionaire on television once saying he would never travel first class. He always travels club unless anyone pays for him. He was a millionaire. I thought, yes.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Jonathan.
Yeah, nice talk to you, Nick. Take care.
Ta-ta. Here's Basildon. Margaret.
Hi there.
Margaret.
You want to know what Silver Service is?
Wasn't he right?
Partway there. Silver Service is when the waiter-waitress, flunky whoever, balances a platter in one hand and serves with a fork and a spoon, usually, in one hand, and sort of, you know, just manages to serve it between a fork and a spoon with one hand.
That sounds like a throwback to the 70s, doesn't it?
I think it goes a lot further back than that.
No, but I mean, that was the last time that anybody did that.
Oh, no, people still do it.
They do?
Yeah.
Where?
If you attend the right functions.
And do you attend the right functions?
Not anymore, but I used to.
Oh,
but no, it still goes on at sort of very good hotels, functions and so on. Silver Service is still used, and you might even get someone phone in training in catering that says that they have to learn to serve Silver Service.
So how come you used to go to functions like that?
Well, I thought everybody did. Eventually, you go to one or two maybe in your lifetime. I didn't go to many, but I also used to serve at functions as well, and that's how I know a bit more about it.
And why do they have to use it's almost like chopsticks, isn't it?
It's just posh.
It just seems silly. I mean, I bet no one does that anymore.
I bet you they do. I'll have a side bet with you. Bet they do. I bet you get someone phone in and say they do it.
I bet there's one grand hotel in London that still does, because just the one, because most of them have been modernised, haven't they?
But I don't think it's a question of being modern. I think it's just a measure of nice service, let's put it that way.
No, I think it's an antiquated service. I bet if you go up north to places like Preston and Hull and people...
I probably never did it up north anyway.
Well, I bet there's certain establishments that like to put on airs and graces.
I'm sure there are.
And I bet it's, there are pockets where it's still done, but I don't think...
I'm sure there are.
I bet no one does that in London anymore. Bar perhaps one restaurant in one grand hotel that still smells of cabbage.
Well, for me to be right and for you to be wrong, I'd love a catering student to phone in and say they are still taught as part of their course Silver Service.
All right, well, we'll find out. Thanks, Margaret.
I'll keep listening.
Ta-ta.
Bye.
Chester, hello, Stephen.
Hello, Nick. Nick, my lad, who's just turned 18, went to New York last week. He spent about a year saving up for it, okay. What do you think they asked him at customs when he plonked himself at the desk?
Would you mind taking off the burqa?
No, it basically said to him, how come you've got so much money and how did you get this together so quickly?
How much was it?
I think it's about $800. But the point is, I thought they wanted you to go to New York in order to spend money.
They stopped him for $800?
Well, they basically said, well, why have you taken $800 or how did you get this together so quickly? I mean, is there an 18-year-old with two 17-year-olds? You know, perhaps it's just because they're young.
Why did he take it in cash?
I don't know. I suppose it's just easier. He just split it up into two wallets and, took it to spend in New York.
I guess that no one goes through with a lot of cash.
Yeah,
you know, everything's on credit card in the States. If you haven't got a credit card in America, you might as well not be alive.
Yeah, I mean, I've given him a small credit card to take with him with a very low credit limit. You know, I didn't trust him on a high one. But, I mean, you know, do you know how much tourists spend in New York a year?
Oh, yes, I do have that figure to hand, yeah.
All right, it was $22 billion.
Right.
You know, it's an rent, well, a big amount. And I just thought to myself, well, we want you here to spend some money. And I was just surprised that they said to him, how come you got all this money?
I've had no end of stories of people that are having, almost to the point that you don't want to go anymore, that people are having problems getting into the States. It's just, like a full-on nightmare. You queue for 6 years, by which time the hotel that you had booked has been knocked down and... Yeah, they're just making it too difficult now.
Yeah.
But to stop someone coming in with 800, I thought it might be, doing a drug deal or something like that. Traveller's checks he wants to go with, he hasn't got a credit card.
Well, he actually got in, but they were just asking him why have you got so much money so quickly, you know.
But I guess they must be bored, you know. I mean, you sit in that little box and just a stream of people come by you all day long. You just must get, it just must be mind-numbing. So you... I'm sure you just pick on people just for the fun of it.
And what did you used to say about people who work at them kind of things? They're always people who haven't got any qualifications, really, and they've ended up there.
What did I always say about
them? You always used to say about people doing the security checks.
Right.
Checking your baggage and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, people who failed the police exam.
Yeah, so, Mr... what did you call him? Mr. Bureaucratic?
I don't know. You seem to pay more attention to my shows than I do.
But, they get very officious because perhaps, they found...
That's all that's left to them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's basically all I had to say, Nick.
And how much money did he end up spending?
He's coming back tomorrow. He took $800 and he had £500 on my credit card, which was available to him, which he's got about £80 left up. So it's not bad, really.
Well, if that's, if it is actually that way, then yeah. Because he could, of course, overspend on the credit card.
You better not. I mean, I started off with a £6,000 limit on this card, but I reduced it to £500 because I didn't trust an 18-year-old with my card.
No, quite right. I mean, when I went to the States last, I was just slightly older than him, and I was going there for 3 months, and I spent all of my money in 1 week in New York.
And didn't you end up... stuck at your brother's or something in, I don't know, somewhere in America with about a week to go and you had nothing to do or something?
Oh, there was an endless month upon month that I had nothing to do in the States. Yeah, I eventually stood, the stories I could tell, we haven't got time. But one day, I'll write it in a book. Everyone else is writing them.
Thanks, Nick.
Cheers, Stephen.
Bye.
This is LBC, Travel with Alan Joyce.
Thanks, Nick. We're still looking at these big problems then on the A12 going south.
This is from the Standard today. Are they still selling the Standard? The amount of the blizzard of free papers that you get. I mean, I don't just travel into the West End much. I never leave the flat if I can possibly avoid it. But you go into the West End now and you can't walk 10 yards without somebody shoving a free newspaper in your face. Why would anybody buy the Standard anymore? Those people that sell them, they must be furious.
It's gone up in price as well, hasn't it?
How much is it now?
It's 50p.
What? 50p?
You get two Suns for that.
You could, yeah, and you get, what, 3-4 pages of news, and the rest is ads and fluff.
Yeah,
because
reviews.
It used to be, yeah, we used to buy the Standard for the sole reason of not looking at any of your passengers on the tube home, right? That's the
yes.
only reason you'd buy it, because you know what the day's news is, because you read a proper paper in the morning, and you can see it when you get home on the TV news. So the only reason that people buy the Standard, and the genius move on their part was to staple it together... so that you could, with one hand, turn the page while you were holding onto the slimy pole on the tube in your other hand. You know that they're going to be spraying the tube, or so they say, with like dust particles, like silver particles of some kind.
Like antiseptic type.
Exactly, yeah, so that the microbes can't germinate. What a great idea.
If only
they could clean the tube before they did it, that would be an excellent move. Because most of the time I try to travel on the tube without actually touching anything. I've got my hands in my pockets, and I'll lean against things right enough. But if I can get from one place to the next without touching anything on the tube...
Do you sit down?
Then, occasionally. I sat in chewing gum last time I sat down.
Oh, God. I hate sitting on the very end seat of the four set of seats, because you have to lean on the screen where someone's either been sleeping in the morning and just all their hair gel is kind of smeared onto that transparent screen.
That just mystifies me. There's no clear glass on the tube that hasn't got someone's... that doesn't look like it's had someone's face pressed against it. Why would you do that?
It's cheap.
What's cheap?
Tube travel.
Oh. Well, I don't know. Is that correct? I think people will be, spitting their snacks that they started at 3:09 across the room. Cheap? This is the most expensive underground system in the world.
It's the cheapest form of travel I know at the moment.
Oh, right. In London. That's what you're comparing it to. All right. Apart from riding a bicycle...
Oh, yeah, forgot those.
It must have sounded like a good idea at the time. Leave 10 brightly coloured bikes unlocked at high-profile sites around London and offer them to the public for free communal use to publicise the health benefits of cycling. That's not why they did it. Halfords did this, right? They didn't want to promote the benefits of cycling. They wanted to promote Halfords.
Of course they did.
And they've done a tremendous job because there's the word Halfords appears about 20 times on this one page. The experiment is over, however, and what they intended to do was to collect the bikes and then ship them off to a cycling charity in Africa. Excellent idea, right? But they mistook the largesse of Londoners. Guess what's happened to them? Well, it's a no-brainer. They've all gone. Of course they have. Londoners nicked them. 2 weeks after Halfords asked for the distinctive orange bicycles to be returned, not one has materialised. I rode a bike yesterday for the first time in, blimey, since I was a child.
Like was it yours?
130 years ago. No, it wasn't. It was something similar to this. I went to Battersea Power Station. Battersea Power Station is open now, and for the next week or so, on, I think, Thursday through Sunday, they've got this bizarre art exhibition open there. And if you're interested in that tremendous building, it's going to be one of the only opportunities you get to walk around it in its current state, which is ravaged, really. I went around it about 20 years ago, and there were still giant bits of plant in there, and all the dials from the control room, and it's properly tremendous. Now it looks... well, it looks like something from the movie Full Metal Jacket. It's it looks like it's been literally in a war.
Is there a roof?
No, it's completely open.
Just a shell?
Yeah, it's and with holes in it. But it's still a tremendous building, and this is one of the only opportunities you'll get to walk around it.
Is the art any good?
Is the what, sorry?
The art.
Oh, art. It's bizarre. It's a weird experience being in there and looking at it, but if the art was in a gallery, I wouldn't bother going.
Right.
No. But it's great to go because of where it is.
Yeah, I want to look at the building.
Yeah, quite. Mm. Well, you get to wander around. Mm. Much more so than I thought, because I thought you'd be shepherded to and fro because of health and safety reasons, and we don't want you tripping over and, you know, all of that. But no, you just get to wander around. And they've got about 100 or so bikes there that you can just pick up and cycle around the site. Tremendous. And so I tried it. And I remembered in about 15 seconds flat why I don't ride a bike anymore. Because it's deeply, deeply painful. How can people stand it?
But you don't know who's used that bike before you. That's like going on the tube. You don't know who's been sat in that seat before you.
Right, well, it's my hands that I'm worried about, not the seat area.
Yeah.
Unless it's been smeared with chewing gum.
That's
which is
true.
A bizarre criminal practice. Something that I really don't get. I mean, if you smear a seat with chewing gum and then you waited around, giggling behind your hands for somebody to sit on it...
It's
then
the
you,
perfect crime.
Then you could see the results of your crime. But just to leave it there and then go, and then imagine later that someone might sit in it, that just doesn't seem like worth it. Do you know what I mean?
It's a lot of effort, isn't
it? I don't get it. But anyway, cycling. It's incredibly dangerous. You're bound to get killed. And it's uncomfortable. Like, you know, is there a more uncomfortable thing to sit on than the bicycle saddle? No.
No.
Cyclists used to put stakes down their shorts to make it more comfortable to sit on. Do you realise that?
No, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actual pieces of meat, yeah. Not a saveloy and two Scotch eggs. Steaks.
Wow. Does that work?
I don't know. I'll have to try it.
Which part of the leg?
Well, under the bottom part.
Okay.
Where you sit.
Of course.
Thereby making it more comfortable.
Right.
Are you with me now?
Just about.
This is LBC.
London's LBC 97.3. 0870 90 90 973. Nick Abbott.
Oh, right, yeah.
Biggin Hill, hello, Iris.
Oh, hello.
Iris.
Yes, I'm here.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Super duper. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm ringing about the Silver Service.
Oh, yeah.
Topic.
Go on, then.
Well, I'm a member of the Orpington Ladies Luncheon Club.
Oh, get you.
We meet to raise money for cancer.
The Orpington Ladies Luncheon Club. Right.
We meet on the first Wednesday of every month.
Yeah.
And we are served...
luncheon.
Lovely waitresses with their little white pennies. We have Silver Service.
It's like being back in, what's the... oh, Lion's Tea Room.
Well, there's about 100 of us anyway.
Huh. And what do you eat?
I'll tell you what next Wednesday's lunch is.
Oh, they flag it up ahead of time in case you, you know, want to make a complaint.
Yeah, well, we're going to start with Stilton bacon and cherry tomato salad, followed by grilled salmon steak with tomato, prawn and coriander sauce, new potatoes, peas and baby corn.
Lashings of gravy?
No, I don't know.
Tomato sauce?
Isn't it? And raspberry pavlova, coffee. And then we've got a speaker, Elizabeth O'Donnell, on the life of a family barrister. Then we have a raffle, which raises about £100.
And be honest, Iris, during the speech, you're going to be, you know, like nodding off, your eyes will be half closed.
Oh, most of them fall asleep yeah. during the after-dinner speaker, I can assure you. Anyway, it's great.
And then you wake up for the raffle. What will you win?
Oh, a bottle of wine, maybe, box of chocs, various Christmas presents that people didn't want last year. That kind of thing.
Right. That sounds great.
It is.
I can't come, though, can I? Because I'm not a lady. Oh, no.
Oh, well, anyway.
Call us up and tell us how it went, all right?
I will.
Ta-da. Bye-bye. What a nice lady. Here is Harrow. Harrow, Jeremy.
Hello, Nick. That was a long interlude there on there. It's quite loud on the mobile as well. Listening to your previous caller saying about an 18-year-old went to the States with cash and they questioned him where he got the money from.
Yeah.
I have to say, I will never, ever voluntarily, ever go to America again. I went years ago and I loved it, but never again. They have a nasty culture now if you have cash, they assume you're a drug dealer and will confiscate that money and you have to prove where it came from, which in many cases is almost impossible. But by far the worst aspect now, and we are doomed to emulate them, is that if you want to go there, you stand in a queue where they will photograph you, fingerprint you, scan you and everything like that as if you were a common criminal and won't even thank you for it, and they expect you to spend your holiday money there. So I'm afraid if they want my data, well, someone else can go there. Some other mug can go there and hand over their prints, but I won't be doing so.
Wow, I think they probably traced this call, Jeremy, and the only way that you'll be going to the States now is if the FBI extraordinarily rendition you.
Yeah, I
that's something to look forward to. They'll be bashing on your door within about 10 seconds, I would think. This is LBC.
London's LBC 97.3.
Hello?
0870 90 90 973. Nick Abbott.
Hi, honey. How are you?
Cops were quizzing supermodel Naomi Campbell over her ninth alleged assault yesterday. The volatile model has a long list of previous form for flying into a rage and attacking her aides. What's the worst job in the world? That's right, being an aide to Naomi Campbell. The latest claim from her drugs counsellor triggered Naomi's arrest at her home in central London yesterday. The unnamed councillor walked into a police station with scratches all over her face, which she insisted were caused by Naomi, 36. There's a picture of her attacking the cameraman. Whoa. That's called riding the fader. Well done, Ellen. The marks were so red on this woman's face that you could tell the attack happened only recently. Cops immediately swooped on Naomi's home and took her in. The police said in a statement, a woman attended the London police station and alleged an assault at her address in Westminster. Officers attended the address and a woman aged 36 was arrested at approximately 1:21 and 17 seconds. This is her charge sheet.
What was that voice?
That was how police speak.
Oh, right, sorry, thanks.
All policemen speak like that.
Okay.
While bending their knees away from each other. In July 2006, a maid, Amanda Brack, 20, sues for verbal and physical assault. Before that, Campbell is charged with hitting a maid, Anna Scorvino, 42, with a mobile, a bloodstained uniform, is pictured in the Standard, for no other reason than they've got a picture of it. Actress Yvonne Seo, 37, says she was covered in blood after the supermodel attacked her. Cops were called to Campbell's flat after she allegedly slaps and punches a maid. The model says it was self-defence. An aide sued Campbell in 2003 after she reportedly threw a phone at her. In 2001, Campbell's assistant, Simone, said that she was held hostage and beaten. Campbell's lawyer denies the claim. In 2000, PA Vanessa Frisbee, what a great name, was claimed that she was attacked by Campbell. And in 1998, aide Georgina Galanis sued the model for £4.5 million, saying that Campbell threatened to throw her from a car. Campbell admits it and undergoes anger management. Wow. She seems like a nice lady, doesn't she?
Wonderful.
Yes. So that has to be one of the... I mean, who would take that job? You'd have to be off your chump.
It might look good on the CV, though.
Yeah, sure it would. Yeah. Well, you could stand it. If you were going for the SAS. Yeah. So what's the worst job you've ever had? I have an idea what mine is.
Oh. It must be...
Shall I give you a moment?
Yeah.
All right. Shall I give you a moment, Alan?
Yep.
Okay. Here's Whiteley. Hello, Kevin.
Oh, hello, Nick.
Whiteley's.
Oh, it's Whiteley. It's Nick Croydon.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to talk about Lost.
Lost?
Yeah. Well, I did start watching it because it opened the Blaze publicity. And I watched the first episode. And then I think I watched the second, but that was about as much as I could take because I could see that they were going to drag this thing out forever and ever, and nothing was ever going to happen.
Well, you're much smarter than me. I wish I'd dipped out that early, but I watched 22 episodes, and I thought, at the end... Because I used to just... If I'd start watching something, then I'd watch it forever until they actually took it off the air. But now, these days, you know, if, even in the course of one programme that I would normally watch, if it's not funny, like The Simpsons, for instance. Often, The Simpsons is the funniest thing that's on TV that day.
Yeah.
But sometimes... It's so smarmy and, you know, just think, no, this is never going to be funny, so I dip out after 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I think you get to a stage in your life when you think, you know, life is actually too short and you can see the end rushing towards you. So you make decisions like that. You become harder.
Well, the thing is with Lost, you can never see an end to it because they're just dragging it out. Nothing ever happens. And I think, like I said, I watched the first two, perhaps three, and I thought, this is going to go on forever. Nothing ever really happening. They're going to tease you and keep teasing you. So I just watched it on the head. I mean, I've a lot of trouble watching programs like that. Even watching films, I have trouble watching. So
yeah, I'll dip out of films now. If they haven't grabbed me within the first 15 minutes, I just won't watch them anymore. Yeah. Whereas before, as I say, I used to watch. If I'd started it, I'd finish. Like Bamber Gascoigne. Was that Bamber Gascoigne or was that Magnus?
Magnus.
Bamber Gascoigne showed up on TV the other day.
Yeah,
driving one of those electric cars.
I saw that. He hasn't changed very much, has he?
Not at all, no. And you know what? It would be just great if he would come back and do University Challenge, because I'd watch it if he was doing it again. But, you know, the guy that's doing it at the moment, I just find
him... He's so smug, isn't he?
Unbearable, yeah. Like, he'll be tutting at people and say, oh, come on, you must know that. looking at the answer written in front of him. Yeah.
Exactly. I like it when he interviews politicians, but the smugness when he does university challenges is just too much.
Yes. You just want one of the contestants to rise from their chair and throttle him.
Well, if they get a rugby player or something up there, and they can fly across the studio and hold him around his neck.
Yes. Celebrity beatings. I'd pay a lot of money to watch a programme called that.
Yeah, obviously.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Cheers.
Ta-da. Here is Northolt. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
Brian?
Yes?
Yes, Brian.
Hi. Two things. First of all, like yourself, I was very fortunate to go around Battersea Power Station for about 30 years ago when it was still operating.
Oh, right. The noise must have been incredible.
A friend of mine was a chief engineer there, and it was the most incredible cathedral to power. I think that was what they nicknamed it, the cathedral.
Because it was all stopped when I went around, and this was 20... Where are we now? This is like 22 years ago. Incredible to think that the building has been doing nothing for that period of time. In fact,
well,
it's outrageous.
There's been several schemes for it, but...
No, I know, But I don't think that any of them were really serious. I got the feeling that the people that had bought it or were putting forward schemes just secretly hoped that the thing would fall down, and they'd say, oh, sorry about that. We'll have to just clear all those bricks away because it'd be far too expensive to build back up again, and we'll put a lot of executive flatlets up in its place.
Well, personally, I know it was the German bombers during the war, etc. But personally, I think it's now a waste of space. I just wish they would knock it down.
Oh, come on, Brian. You're obviously not a Pink Floyd fan. You can't say that. Knock it down.
Why not?
Because it's one of the most beautiful... I mean, if you like brick, and I like a lot of brick, you know, power stations, they speak to me. Calling Dr. Freud, I think. You know, the Bankside, that's a great building as well, but nothing beats
Battersea
Power
Station. I think it's more likely to be Dr. Seuss rather than Dr. Freud.
No, they can't knock it down. It's going to be a difficult one to do something with, though, because there's precious few windows.
It always has been something that will be very difficult to do anything with. The reason why they made it a listed building was because... the Germans failed to actually get it during the Second World War with their bombs. But, you know, I used to drive past it every day. And quite honestly, I think it's become a real eyesore now.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm sorry.
Because it's a shell. They'll just have to fix it up and paint the chimneys and put, I don't know. I've got no idea what you put in there. The world's biggest bowling rink, or shops of some description, or cinemas, or just leave it as a shell. I mean, it's inconceivable that they would knock that down. It's an outrage, Brian. You're totally wrong.
I've often been described as outrageous, but there you go. The other thing to have a word with you about was Silver Service.
Yeah.
All the catering colleges still teach Silver Service.
But no one ever uses it.
Yes, they do. You go to any reasonably good hotel where they have a decent restaurant, not one of these bistro-type things, where they have waitresses and waiters serving, and they will actually serve you with Silver Service.
Right. Okay, I'll look out for it, Brian, and avoid it like the plague. This is LBC.
People who... LBC 97.3 0870 90 90 973. Nick Abbott.
How may I help you?
12 years after he was last on TV. Hey, Noel Edmonds is back. Guess who else is back? It's worse than Noel Edmonds.
Bobby Davro.
It's not that bad. Well, actually, it is. It's worse than Bobby Which one is Bobby Davro? Is he the one that says, chase me, chase me?
I think it is.
Is that who that is?
Yeah.
Bobby Davro? No.
Oh.
Who?
Lena Zavaroni.
Lena Zavaroni is not the right answer.
Christopher Biggins.
No. Worse than that.
Farrah Fawcett Majors.
Is wrong. No, you're awful at this game. It's somebody, I don't even know if you're old enough.
Keith Chegwin?
No, not Keith Chegwin.
Fanny Craddock.
Fanny Craddock is still dead.
Emma Forbes.
No. Who's that?
Can we have a clue?
Yes. Jimmy Savile.
Oh.
Yeah, that was my reaction as well. Oh, no. Exactly. 12 years after he last fixed it. I can't believe he's still alive. Jimmy Savile is still alive. Everyone's stunned. He's going to come back for a new series of Jim'll Fix It.
No.
Yes. You old enough to remember that?
Yeah, I am.
The show made youngsters... It says here that the show made youngsters' dreams come true and ran in a Saturday tea time slot on BBC One for 19 years.
Wow.
Struth.
That's a lot of dreams.
That's a lot of Saturday tea times ruined. Yeah. The new series called Jim'll Fix It will air on UK TV Gold, where old shows go to die, and will revisit classic fix-its with celebrity guests and contributors to the original show. Said Jimmy, it's something I've been looking to do for some time. Well, yeah, I can imagine.
What, does that mean there's no more work out
well,
there?
Well, yeah, I mean, what's he done lately? He showed up for Top of the Pops and everyone was amazed that he was still, you know, moving around like a living human being. But before that, he hasn't troubled the box for a good long while.
Can you do the impression?
No, but I bet you can. I've got a team out now looking for people who are on Fix It so we can bring them back, he says. I'm always bumping into people that were on the show. I have a pretty good memory. And for some, it was the biggest thing that happened in their life. That's one of the most depressing sentences I've ever read.
They were never extravagant things, though, were they?
TV wasn't in those days. They didn't have any money. The biggest thing to happen in your life would be a weird guy in a gold lamé jumpsuit would get you to meet Keith Chegwin. And that's the best thing that's happened in the last 20 years. That just seems awful, doesn't it? Classic Fixes involved a group of Cub Scouts who were asked to eat their packed lunch on a roller coaster with predictably messy results. That's the kind of quality of its that
but,
he used to
yeah,
fix.
That's easy to organise, isn't it?
Well, you'd think so, yeah. Just take your lunch on a roller coaster.
Of course.
And there'd be the predictably messy results. the programme did not just fix it for children. Actor Peter Cushing, there's a tearful moment coming up, so get ready. Actor Peter Cushing wrote into the show in 1986 to ask if a variety of rose could be named after his late wife. Oh, come on, Helen, that's not a bleh, that's an R.
I wrote to him once when I was about 12 or 13.
Yes?
And I asked if I could go on to a desert island.
A desert island,
yeah.
Eh? Yeah. And?
Nothing.
Oh.
Don't you even get a standard reply?
No.
Letting you down gently?
No.
Oh.
The new show will invite viewers who wrote into the original but didn't have their wish granted to have another go.
Oh. What's the address?
Savile, who recently returned to BBC One to present the final edition of Top of the Pops, said the show was successful because of its broad appeal. I was walking down the corridor at the BBC and someone said to me, you've been fixing things all your life, why don't you turn it into a show? He said, why don't we call it Jim'll Fix It? And that's how it started. That's how, oh, talk about a legendary tale in show business, eh? He said you could watch it with your 80-year-old daughter and 80-year-old auntie, and that's the problem right there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really do shows like that anymore, do they? For a very good reason. They're awful. Anything that would appeal to an 8-year-old and a teenager and a young adult and your granddad, what kind of a show would that be?
Family Fortunes.
It would be beige, is what it would be. It would be like, it would be as bland as a tall glass of water. I mean, you'd have to have really low expectations for entertainment for that to be your great Saturday evening viewing. In a country that at the time had about, what, just over 40 million people? Something of that order at the time when that show was going out. Guess how many used to tune in?
19,
half.
Yeah.
No.
Half. Half of the people that were living in this country used to tune into that show. Isn't that amazing?
But you had four channels in those days, didn't you?
But even fewer than that. Mm. I don't think Channel 4 appeared until way after Jim'll Fix It had left the air.
Mm.
It was like three at best.
Mm.
And on BBC Two, it would be some grey show with people talking to each other. So no change there, then.
Yeah.
And it's just You know, we used to, well, we still do, we think of, you know, when we had three channels, that was the golden age of television. But it wasn't, because it was dominated by that. Tribe. Family entertainment. And it was Morecambe and Wise, which we all have fond memories of, but if you see it again these days, you'll find that actually it's not funny. Say it in a whisper. Well, The Two Ronnies continues to be funny, because they were wordsmiths, but Morecambe and Wise relied on their the force of the personality of the tall one with the glasses, which and comedies that do that are usually of their time. I mean, people used to be falling off their chair with laughter every time he'd jiggle his glasses up and down, but now you look at it and you go,
They keep showing that on Channel 5 now every Christmas, don't they?
What, the Morecambe and Wise Christmas special?
Yeah.
Because what, they've got nothing else to show? Channel 5?
Well, probably because the BBC has got everything up. Scooped everything up. All the best films, all the best programmes. There's nothing there for Channel 5.
Right. Oh, if only I had a sad violin music, I'd be playing it around about now. How about Chiswick? Hello, John.
Hello there. I'm trying to work out why on earth you're putting the boot in for poor old Silver Service, other than for the fact that it would seem you don't actually have a clue what it is.
Other than the fact that it was what?
That you don't know what it is, what it means. It, by the way, it has nothing to do with Silver Domes either.
Well, don't attack me for what callers have said.
But I'm just wondering why you say you said a few minutes ago, if I ever see it, I'll try and avoid it.
Yeah, like the plague. Yeah.
But why?
Because it would be full of people who talk like you, full of people who are living in the past. It's not a modern thing. No.
What do you do with the past? It's a very practical way of serving. It means you don't have portion control. You don't have every potato and every pea on the same place on the plate. You say how much you'd like, you don't have to have a lot, you don't have to have a little. When the waitress serves it, she says how much you want.
All right, well, ask me this, John. If it's got nothing to do with modernism, then why don't people do it anymore?
Because it's labour-intensive, that's why. It costs more, because you've got to have more waiters and waitresses. A simple reason, that's the only reason why you'll find that there's less of it. It's easier to put everything on a plate in the kitchen, and then just put it down, plonk it down in front of the customer, rather than having waiters who are trained in Silver Service. Silver Service is quite a special thing to do, because you've got to know how to use a spoon and a fork in one hand.
Okay, here's the reason why I would avoid it like the plague.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't sound like fun. It sounds like the kind of restaurant that you would go where you would have to dress up and sit
absolutely
up straight. And it would be a fun-free zone. I mean, it just sounds so stiff, like you'd have to be wearing a tie at the time.
Absolutely not. No question about it at all. When you said a little while ago that I bet they've never heard of it up in the north, untrue.
No, I didn't say that they'd never heard of it up in the north. I said that's where they would be... Impossible to talk to someone who just won't pause. I didn't say, and who isn't listening. This has followed me my whole life. Like, I'd say something on the air and somebody would say, you know, you've just said, I don't know, all women are criminals. I'm like, what? What show are you listening to? I didn't say that they would never have heard of it. I'd say that that's where they did it.
If you've just missed that
in Corfu,
London's LBC 97.3,
0870 90 90 973.
Nick Abbott.
Yeah.
Canary Wharf. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Nick.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not bad.
Oh, phoning in, mate. I can't believe that you can talk about the legendary Jimmy Savile saying his programmes were dull. The geezer's an absolute legend.
A legend?
Oh, come on. He should have done more than Jim will fix on top of the Forest. Imagine him reading the football balls. Now then, Arsenal 6, Tottenham 3. The geese is a legend.
Was this whole call just so that you could do an impersonation of Jimmy Savile?
No, not really, no.
Which is the easiest one to do, with the possible exception of Tommy Cooper.
Go on, let's see your Jimmy Savile.
No, I'm not going to do
that.
Come
on, let's see your Jimmy Savile. You said it was easy.
Definitely not. No, I will not do that. I won't go there, girlfriend. No, a legend. Can you do you actually have a... Are you serious that you think he's a legend, or you
yeah,
just...
Yeah, Jimmy Savile was brilliant.
You just wanted to do the impersonation.
The money, of course, he's raised for charity, mate.
Oh.
Ah, the geezer's top notch.
Just because you raise a lot of money for charity doesn't mean that people are forced to like you.
Oh, everyone likes Jimmy Savile.
No, they don't. I think people are irritated beyond measure by Jimmy Savile. Hands up, anyone.
I bet Ian likes Jimmy Savile.
Well, call him. He's in LA. Hold on, I'll give you his number. Hands up in there who would look forward to seeing Jimmy Savile on anything again. Now, hands up who won't look forward to seeing Jimmy Savile on it. Wow, that's overwhelming. Here's one in Stepney. Hello, Kevin.
Hi there, Nick.
Kevin.
Just wanted to give you a quick buzz and say that I agree with your stance on Battersea Power Station, mate. It's a marvellous building. It looks great from the river. And I think what you ought to do is open it up to, open it up as a nightclub or as a music venue. There you go.
You could put 10 music venues in there. It's about the same size as Trafalgar Square. It is massive in there. That's the problem they're going to have, is what are they going to do with it?
Well, you know, they can fill it up. I mean, like, you can even bring back Pink Floyd. Now, that would be amazing. First concert by Pink Floyd. Fill it up tenfold.
All right, I'll pass the message on, all right. Cheers,
Kevin. Thanks, bye. Ta-ra.
Yeah, that's the problem with Battersea. What could you possibly do that people would want to go there to experience? Because the problem that Battersea has is that there's no transport. How'd you get there? There's no tube there. And I think that's what that nice Mr. Wang, or whatever his name was, from Hong Kong, he bought it, didn't he? Spare change. And they had planned to put an underground station there. And then they turned around and said, oh, you know what? Sorry about this, we're not going to do that anymore. And I think his interest waned. That's with Leighton. Oh, Imran.
Oh, hi, Nick.
How are you?
Not too bad, thanks.
What's up?
Went to a 5-star hotel for a meal.
Yeah.
And the food was it was the smallest portion in the world. And we weren't allowed to take. We had to dress up. Weren't allowed to take our jackets off. Had to keep on all through the meal. Everyone in the hotel was just pin silent, pin drop silent. It was just so awkward.
Yeah, stiff. It's just a no-fun zone. That's why no one does Silver Service anymore, because
it's... I mean, it's one of the most prestigious restaurants, I mean, the hotels in London, but...
Yeah, it's just too much faffing around. It's from a distant bygone age. No one lives like that anymore.
We all look forward to it, but when we got there, it was very, very disappointing.
Yeah.
And there was a party of 10 of us, and then we all come back and went for a kebab. I think the meal with the restaurant came to just over £1,000, and the kebab was, I think, just under £30.
And which did you enjoy more?
The kebab. Right. Back in a factory in the east end of London.
Just as long as you hold your nose while you're eating it, and don't think about what's in it. In it. All right, cheers, Imran.
Thanks, Nick, bye-bye.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about Silver Service all night, or in fact ever again. But the reason why no one does it anymore is because it's just not an enjoyable way to spend your evening. And the only places that do it, unlike that nice man that called before and got completely the wrong end of what I said, was it's not that they haven't heard of it in the north. It's the north that will be the last bastions of. This great involved process of serving food, because no one wants to live like that anymore. So it'll be restaurants and hotels that I don't know. Do I really want to abuse the North that much? But it's kind of a very snobbish kind of just clinging on to the grand old way of doing things that we've moved on from in London. We just and that's why all the grand hotels, they don't do it anymore. I think there's about one of them left, and people like Michael Winner will go along and he'll wave his napkin in the air and he will enjoy all of that sort of stuff. But anybody under the age of 50, no, it's just not how you want to live. You want to eat your dinner in a tie. Why would anybody want to do that? It's a food magnet for a start. Here's Hampstead. Hello, Billy.
Yeah, I'm still there.
Billy?
Yes.
What's up?
I'd like to see Jimmy Savile on something.
Would you?
Yeah.
Is this a part of a joke? You're going to say the gallows, something
no,
like that?
No, I was going to just say the bonfire at Guy Fawkes Night.
Yeah, I knew it was something.
Well, because he is an insipid character. He's irritating beyond belief and a bigger pain in the backside than Piles.
He is kind of... It's just a bit... It makes me feel uncomfortable. It's a bit weird. You know?
When Louis Theroux did the programme on him, he was quite sort of a weird character. He kept his mother's room exactly as it was, and for a man in his 60s or 70s, it was a little bizarre, to say the least.
Well, he's made a living out of being bizarre, and it was... I guess we all accepted it back then, because DJs were larger-than-life personalities in the 70s.
Wacky characters.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, but there was little alternative in those days. You had three channels and that was it.
Precisely. And DJs on Radio 1 were huge stars. And
no competition.
And we accepted them for whatever act they'd like to throw at us.
We had no choice. I don't think we accepted them. There just was little choice. The BBC had their own way of doing things, and anything they didn't like was written off.
And they, in order to justify what they used to do, they say, oh, you know, I used to have 19 million viewers, and people are agog about that, because, you'd have to have a it'd be England against Germany in the World Cup final to get.
Well,
you had
naff all else to watch.
Well, exactly. That's the point. That's why there were so
many.
Didn't
go out as much because there weren't so many things to do.
Yes.
Now there's a lot more to do.
And it was cold outside and constantly raining, and you only had one channel to choose from. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Cheers, Billy. Thanks for putting it into perspective. Here's Cock Foster's Sheila.
Hello, Nick.
Sheila.
Listen, anyone in their 50s and 60s, right, us oldens, are going to absolutely love the idea of Jim Will Fix It coming back.
Why?
I mean, it was a wonderful, wonderful programme.
No, it wasn't.
It was. He made people's dreams come true. It was happy and it was sad. There was no dirt involved in it. No murder, no rape. It was all very... And people want that nowadays in the world we're living in.
I don't know. Do they?
Oh, yes. I'm convinced of it. I certainly do. And I was absolutely thrilled today to hear that Multicoloured Swap Shop's coming back for a two-hour
special. Oh, you're joking.
You see, we're not... See, at the moment, all we watch is murder...
Yeah.
Crime,
mm-hmm.
dirt.
Yes.
And all that, right?
Yeah. Did your husband just say,
yeah,
I love that?
He says he loves them.
Right, there you are, you see.
Yeah,
it's just you, Sheila.
Gory is what he watches, but
yeah.
I love all the old things. And when I hear some of the things that they're bringing back, I mean, there must be a reason... Why?
They've run out of ideas. They haven't got any ideas anymore.
Yes, because at the moment, all you can look on the television is filter.
Yeah, great, filter, isn't it?
Crime. Nothing nice. Nothing happens.
Yeah, it's nice eight ladies of a certain age, like you, Sheila, who like all of that stuff. Everyone else, they want a bit of excitement in their lives.
Yeah, but not every day we've got enough... Look, I went to Asda today, for example.
Well, without mentioning any brand names, Asda, was it? Yes.
One of the very many supermarkets.
Yeah.
And this hasn't happened to me before. I was very happily walking round. All of a sudden, there was a fire, an alarm went off, and a woman screeched down the microphone, "Will everybody please evacuate this store immediately?" Well, I've never seen... And this is what... You know, and when you hear these nice programmes are going to come back, it makes up for all what's going on every day.
Hang on a minute, Sheila. What has that got to do with Jimmy Savile?
No, because today life is so dangerous.
Even in Asda, yeah.
Even in Asda, yes. Even in poor little Asda.
That you want a bit of beige blandness into your life.
Not bland. You sit down and... You're a lot younger than me, I know. You sit down when it comes back, especially multicoloured swaps.
Are you sure about that? Where did you read that?
What? Well, you're not 50.
No. Where did you read about multicoloured swap shop?
This morning on the news.
Oh, Struth.
All the originals. Noel Edmonds.
Noel Edmonds is not going to be doing that, is he?
Maggie Philbin, just for 2 hour special.
Oh, not a... Oh, okay.
No, but right. I don't know about Jim Will Fix It. Is that coming back as a regular thing?
I bet it's on a channel that you don't get.
Oh.
UK TV Gold.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
You haven't got... Have you got Sky?
No, not yet. No, I want to get it, though.
Well, there'll be no end of sex and violence, Sheila. It'll be beamed into your living room.
Yeah, but you know, I go to my daughter who's got Sky, and there's channels there, programmes, that were on years ago, repeat.
And, yeah, but most of them will boggle your eyes.
Oh,
you'll be slack-jawed with amazement. But listen, Sheila, I've got to go.
Yeah, you take care.
Best of luck, all right.
Bye.
What a nice lady.
If you could...
No one's having sex anymore. Hands up in there who's had sex lately? In the last year. Hands up. No one. See? I'll get to that story in a minute. First in, and that nice lady who just called, she'll be thrilled. We're a completely sexless society now. No one's doing it. First in, though, Perivale. Hello, Gillian.
Hello, no one's doing it. I just heard the end of that.
No one, at all. It's it's official.
I've so got... long to speak to you, I forgot what I wanted to say now.
Oh, you've got to make notes, Gillian.
Oh, you have to learn. Well, I'm just driving it on the A40 back to sort of the Greenford direction. I've been buying all makeup today. I've been lots of bride weddings and things like that. But I caught the end of that conversation earlier. Something about Silver Service, is that right?
Is this still running? Yeah, okay, Silver Service, yeah.
Well, I mean, I've been to the finest of restaurants and I've been to Joe's Cafe, but there is still a place where etiquette, you know, is a place for people. Now, if you decide that you don't like it, then that's obviously not for you, which is why there are a vast sort of choice of restaurants. But it is still lovely to be served beautifully and to see people dress up, because we're in an age now where people tend to want to dress down and sort of flub out.
Yeah.
Which is fine if that's what you want, but there is also a lovely element which certainly pleases me, not for everybody, but you can get that.
Oh, you're cracking up, Gillian. I think, yeah, well, you've gone. She's gone. So that's what you get for, you know, driving with a phone in one hand and makeup in the other and steering with your knees. But no, the Silver Service, and this is the last time I want to talk about this because, you know, it will die out with the generation who's eaten it now. The old buffers, you know, guys with monocles, all of that stuff. I don't want any more calls on Silver Service because, you know, young people just aren't interested. Stepney Green, hello, Dean.
All right, Nick, how you going, mate?
I am all right.
Good, good. I don't agree with you as far as Morgan & Wise is concerned.
How old are you?
I'm 38.
Right.
Because I think what you're doing is you're judging them on the standards of television today.
I'm just judging them on the standard of what's funny. You know, I mean, if you look at something and you laugh, then it's funny, no matter how old it is.
Yeah, but if you remember the breakfast scene with Morgan & Wise?
Yeah.
That was funny.
No, it was cute. Did you laugh out loud? Be honest.
No, I laughed. See? I didn't laugh out loud.
Well, what's laughing and not laughing out loud? That's smiling.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, well then that means it's amusing at best, not funny.
All right, what's funny today? What makes you laugh out loud?
Well, no end of things.
Go on.
He said, desperately trying to think.
Yeah.
What is actually funny on TV right now?
I think Peter Kay's quite funny.
I don't watch that. I tried to like Extras. I really did want to like Extras, but that's not funny either.
Nowhere near as good as The Office.
No, well, yeah, that's right. You know, they should stop doing that, because it seems to be propelled forward just on the basis of we've got a lot of famous names on.
Yeah.
But, you know, you'll watch the whole 30 minutes of what's billed as a comedy show, and if you don't laugh, then I'm sorry, but it's not funny.
Nah. And, I mean, back in the day, like, with Malcolm and Wise and what have you, I mean, you did get sort of 22 million people watching it, so, I mean, that counts for something.
Well, no, because we've been over this. The only reason that they got such giant audiences in the old days is that there was nothing else to watch. They only had three channels.
Yeah, well, no, four, weren't it? Channel 4 coming
in. Well, when
did
Channel 4 go on? 80s? Right, okay.
82,
But Malcolm and Wise was big in the 70s, so I stand by my point.
Yeah, because towards the end, I mean, even their Christmas show, like, wasn't as good and what have you. But, I mean, the two runnies, they was classic. Now, that, you know, did have you laughing out loud.
That's one of the few programmes from the 70s and 80s that remains funny, yes, because it was plays on words. Yes, they were wordsmiths, rather than just relying on comedy shtick.
Yeah,
whatever,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But I agree with you with Jimmy Savile.
Oh, poor old Jimmy. He's getting it in the neck.
I went to him. I wanted to travel on the Bullet in Japan, me and me mate. But we didn't get a reply.
You didn't even get a reply?
Nope.
Well, he's certainly got something to answer for. Maybe if you write again, he'll ignore you again.
Yeah, no, I won't be writing again.
All right, okay, Dean.
All right.
Ta-da.
You take care.
Yeah. No, Morecambe and Wise. Has anybody seen Morecambe and Wise lately? Helen, have you seen Morecambe and Wise lately?
No. No. It's not funny.
It isn't funny. Unfortunately, there's another thing you'd like to like, just for, it would make you, you know, feel warm about liking it.
I thought it was funny because my dad thought it was funny.
Right.
In the 70s.
See, I was the opposite. Anything my parents liked, I would automatically dislike, and vice versa. Top of the Pops being in a perfect example. This is LBC.
London's LBC 97.3. 0870 90 90 973. Nick Abbott.
Hello, boys.
Blackheath, Andy.
Hello. You just asked a really interesting question in conversation with the caller before last. You know, you said, you know, what's on television today, which is funny.
Well, I was just trying to rack my brain. It must be something. I mean, the only thing I could come up with was repeat episodes of Friends.
Yeah, but that's tired and predictable, smug and up itself American humour, though, isn't it?
No, it's funny. It's it'll give you you can laugh out loud at least once a minute. That, to me, that's what a comedy is, if it's something that makes you laugh out loud. And I can't think of hardly anything else that does. I mean, if I can't think of anything that does.
Well, the only thing, well, this is why I called, because the last time I really laughed till my sides ached watching a television programme was Top Gear, which I think is one of the funniest programmes on television.
All right, well, I'm glad you brought that up. Why is it funny? I'll tell you, because it's got Jeremy Clarkson in it.
And it's also got the interplay. They're like three grown-up naughty schoolboys, James May, Richard Hammond and Jeremy Clarkson, and they all take the mick out of each other. And it's, I mean, when they did that, I don't know if you saw the one where they built boats out of cars.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just absolutely hilarious.
I find the interplay between them, particularly when they're doing it in the studio, is a bit irritating because it's so obviously scripted.
Oh, I don't know. It's still funny, though. I still find it very entertaining.
It's one of my favourite shows, but the reason is because of Jeremy Clarkson. And this, you know, the making of a saint of Richard Hammond is really sticking in my throat because I just don't get it. You know, before Richard Hammond joined Top Gear, it was a great show. After he joined, you kind of got irritated when they'd give a car to him to do a film on, because you'd wish that it was Jeremy Clarkson doing it. Am I right?
No, I don't think you are right. I mean, obviously, everybody's going to have a different opinion. I like Richard Hammond. I remember watching him when he used to be a presenter on Men and Motors, and I thought he was good then.
But good in what sense? I mean, good in the sense that he's a presenter who is a professional and doesn't fall over his words when he's reading off an auto cue.
No, I like
but
the guy. I think he comes across as very engaged.
Likeable. Okay. See, and Jeremy Clarkson isn't likable, but he's funny.
Oh, I don't know. I like Clarkson. He's not afraid to call the kettle black, you know, and I like that. He tells it out how it is, and very few people dare do that on television these days.
But the point I'm trying to make is that Richard Hammond is not actually a funny man. He's just a bland, put him on any kind of show presenter. He's beige. He's like a glass of milk. You know, there's not much to him. His thing is to look at the camera with really wide eyes as though to say, aren't I cute? I mean, I haven't got anything funny to say. Don't you love me?
I think you're being overly harsh there. I disagree.
I'm only being overly harsh because the entire country seems to have fallen for him like he's a new Princess Di. Just because he had a crash at 300 miles an hour, now he's been elevated to the role of sainthood. And I just don't get it.
Well, I think I do agree that people do go over the top. I mean, I think, you know, I would have been very sad if anything more serious had happened to him and had been saved or had been left, you know, terminally brain damaged.
But you know what, Andy? 10 people died on Britain's roads yesterday. 10 people died on Britain's roads today. And 10 people will die on Britain's roads tomorrow.
Well, you know what's
where's
worse
their
than that?
Publicity?
What's worse than that is I was looking at the London paper yesterday and they had a story which was literally 10 lines and stuck away in a corner. And it was about the government launching a national accident campaign for children. The 3,700.
Right, right. Something much worse than happened to Richard Hammond. In other words,
on FM, on the LBC 97.3, 0870 90 90 973.
Yeah.
Nick Abbott.
Everything is going extremely well.
Oh, lovely cup of tea. Oh. just the danger of eating while the news is on, because you might not have finished by the time it's stopped. Oh, lovely. No one is having sex anymore. Guess how many people are having sex anymore? That's right, no one. Having lived through the swinging 60s and survived the permissive society that followed, Britain has emerged into the 21st century as a nation much more chaste than many may have suspected. A new portrait of Britain's attitude towards sex and relationships reveal its largely monogamous, if not sexless, society. Are we stunned yet? One in eight women between the ages of 16 and 50 had no sex in the past year. One in eight.
That's quite a lot.
According to the ONS survey, whatever that is, ONS, Office for National Statistics. Oh, this isn't just something that people have made up. This is the
Office
government.
Office for no sex.
One in six men under 70 had no sexual partners in the last year. I'll read that again. Get your jaw off the floor, Chris. One in six men under 70 had no sexual partners in the last year, while 73% had only one. 73% had only one.
Wow. Who does these surveys?
The ONS.
Yeah, but who actually, you know, gets stopped and fills out and reveals all this information?
A lot of people who aren't, you know, busy having sex.
Oh, yeah.
For women, it's only 7% had more than one partner. Only 7% of women in this country had more than one partner in the last year. Dr. Edward, a consultant gynecologist at Norfolk Norwich Hospital, said, Britain was... Oh, no. I'm about to tell you something very bad. Britain was behind the rest of Europe in terms of frequency of sexual activity. There's a bonking gap between us and our EU partners. It may be a cultural thing, but it's not necessarily how often you are having intercourse, but how good it is, says Dr. Edward. What? Britons tend to survive more on companionship in relationships rather than a very active sex life. A breakdown of these statistics puts women between the ages of 16 and 19 who had no sex in the past year at 36%. For men, the figure's even higher. Do you find that surprising? That is actually really weird, that men would be even more chaste than women in this country. The figure drops to 14% among those aged 20 to 24. 14% of those 20 to 24 had, all right, no sex. Okay. So 20 to 24, a little bit more sexually active.
Yeah.
But then after 24, you might as well, you know, sew up your clothes, because no one's going to be interfering with them anymore. The findings were presented at the World Congress of Sexology in Paris. Hey, there's a conference you'd like to sign up for, right? Dr. Petra, hey, that's what she's called, her second name, Boynton, a psychologist at the University College of London, says we're constantly being presented with inaccurate data that everyone is at it like rabbits. What noise do rabbits make?
I think they're silent, aren't they?
Right. Because they're too busy.
At it.
Yes. Sex is overhyped in our culture, she says, and because we are more sexualized culture, the media covers sex a lot more in terms of music, and sex and lifestyle are huge commodities, so people think that everyone's doing it all the time, but actually no one is.
Is it so it's a bad thing that we're not having sex enough?
Is
that what they're trying to say?
It depends on whether you're one of... depends on which statistic you're part of, I suppose.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely cup of tea.
Hey, no worries. It's more of that way it came from.
Yeah, I'm with Boy George on that. I'd much rather have a cup of tea. Let's have one in Tooting Beck. Hello, Will.
Hey, Nick.
Will.
Let me see. Yeah, I just want to... I want to agree with Sheila from Cockfusters. I want to big it up for Jimmy Savile.
Do you?
Yep.
Okay.
But she's absolutely spot on. It's just a nice program to watch, you know?
No.
Look at all these stupid reality TV programs and stuff they dole out in EastEnders and that. And
yeah.
Jimmy Savile's, you know, Jim will fix it with me. It's a nice thing to watch. Did you ever watch it?
Well, yes. Well, I've seen it. I didn't used to like watching it because it just, the whole thing was just, it was for children, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
know,
not even children, like, it's baby time.
I remember one episode where there was this kid, like, you know, he was 12 years old, and he was blind, and he'd learned to play the clarinet, and he wanted to play Stranger on the Shore with Hacker Bilk, and that's what Jimmy Savile arranged for him.
Right, and, well, that's all very heartwarming, but, you know, I'm falling asleep just listening to you describe it.
No, but don't you think that's an inspiring thing to watch? There's this
no.
kid, I mean, it can't be easy to learn to play the clarinet if you can see, never mind if you can't see, and he's gone to all the trouble to learn it, and then he's out there on stage with Hacker Bilk.
Right, okay, well, like I said, that's a really warming thing to hear about, but if I want to be warmed and inspired by stories like that, then I'll go and hang out at the hospital.
Well, I just think it's, you know, it's like Sheila said, it's a nice thing to watch on TV, seeing kids. I mean, I'd cut off my right arm to meet Michael Jordan, but I know it's probably never happened. But if I was a kid now, I'd write in and see if he could arrange it. If he could, it'd probably keep me happy for like 10 years afterwards, you know what I mean?
Right. Okay, I'll send you a saw in the post. All right,
well,
Will.
Listen, Nick.
Yes.
Why don't you just have a text like on it and see if people want to see something nice out on the telly and see if people don't? Because, you know, you make these sweeping statements like who wants to watch this rubbish anymore, but
yeah.
Why don't you find out what the listeners want to think about it?
Okay, I'll definitely do that.
Okay, good luck.
Cheers. By which I mean I won't. Let's have one in Barnsley. Hello, Louise.
Hi, Nick.
Louise.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Oh, I was really, really surprised to hear you, but it was a nice surprise.
Yeah, I'm over here now.
Good.
Ian Lee, by the way, if you've tuned in expecting, you know, he's not here. He's in Los Angeles interviewing the cast of Lost.
Wow.
Because that's where they've shown up. They washed up on the shore in L.A. Everyone is stunned, and that's he's gone over to meet them. Mostly to ask them if, you know, anything's ever going to happen in that show.
I like Lost.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to have that conversation again. That was virtually the whole first hour.
I'm very surprised at the sex service.
Yeah, me too. I can't believe it.
Yeah, because everyone makes out that they're doing it to everyone.
All the time. Yeah.
I mean, you look at the newspapers and it's in there, in some of them, and everybody's talking about it, everybody's singing about it, but it turns out we're not.
No one's doing... Everyone's talking and reading and writing and singing about it, but no one's actually doing it. Because we're too busy reading, writing and singing about it.
Or watching telly. but yeah, I suppose. I think that we just, some people just say it sometimes, you know, to look good.
1 in 8 women between the ages of 16 and 50 had no sex in the past year. At all.
Really?
Really, yeah. And we're behind our EU, competitors, I suppose. Which is really surprising, because I thought that we were leading the field in everything that was bad. You know, if you want to think of sex as being bad, naughty, disgusting, you know, as we sort of deal with it in this society, sniggering behind our hands at naughty love nests and all-night bonking sessions and all that stuff that the tabloids keep throwing at us all the time. But the truth of the matter is that hardly anyone's doing it. In fact, it's very old-fashioned.
Yeah, apparently.
Louise, hold on right there and I'll come back, all right?
Okay.
This is LBC. The Chevrolet Thank you! Louise!
Nick.
Yes. Right. So you're stunned by this survey that's just come out that says, basically, no one in Great Britain, you know, basically, no sex please, we're British.
Yeah.
The French are doing it like crazy, the Germans are you know, all over the place, but we're sitting at home with a cup of tea, dreaming of Jimmy Savile being back on the TV.
Yeah, that's such a typical feature of a Briton. But I think also we're a bit, we're a bit embarrassed to talk about it. Maybe that's got something to do with it.
Well, you mean they came around with a clipboard and said, hello, I'd like to talk to you about your sex life, please. And we said, oh, no, we've got none of that here, and slammed the door. Yeah.
Yeah.
Between 16 and 19, people in this country, 36% had no sex at all in the last year.
Where do all the teenage tendencies come from then?
That's an excellent question. Hull, I think. No offence to the people living in Hull, you know, but... How's your week been, Louise?
It's been fine, thank you. It's all been good.
I can understand every word you say. You've obviously taken our little conversation that we had a little while ago to heart.
Yes.
Louise, by the way, wants to get into radio, and I said that you must... the first thing that you must do is to be understood.
Yes. I'm sorry if I was nasty to you, because I think I was a bit
you?
To you.
Well, yeah. I can't have been listening then. I don't accept your apology, whatever it was you said. No, I don't think you were. But the best of luck. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Ta-da.
Bye.
Here's one in Hampstead. Hello, Sam.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right.
Good. I just wanted to say how ridiculously wrong you were about there being no funny programmes on TV anymore.
Well, I didn't say there weren't any. I just couldn't think of any.
Right. So, I mean, to pick BBC Two, Thursday Night Comedy of, like, Never Mind the Buzzcocks. Yeah, and you said Extras wasn't funny and it was just famous faces trying to make the public laugh.
Correct.
It isn't. I mean, and admittedly, it isn't as funny as The Office and the first series is rubbish. But the second series has been so poignant and hilarious.
Well, see, now there you are. You said it. Poignant. It's the comedy of discomfort, which isn't funny. It just makes you cringe. Unless you're laughing, Sam, out loud, then it's not funny.
You are laughing out loud. You're laughing out loud whilst cringing.
How would that look, by the way?
Pardon?
How would that look? You'd be, like, crunched over and...
I don't know.
No, I totally disagree with you.
And there was a programme on last night with Jack D called Lead Balloon, which is...
Yeah, I tried that as well, and that's got the same thing. It's
it's that same genre of cringeworthy parody.
Yeah, but if you get to the end of a half-hour comedy and you haven't laughed, then it's not funny.
Right, then pick Never Mind the Buzzcocks or Mock the
Painful.
Week. Mock the Week?
What's that?
Oh, come on, Nick. I thought you were a cultured man.
No, obviously not. Yeah.
It's a topical humour show about...
Mock the Week.
It was on, it just finished.
Oh,
at 10:30 on a Thursday, and it was just... It was Dara O'Brien and all these sort of vaguely not very well-known comics.
Right. Is it because they're not funny?
What?
Are they not well-known because they're not funny?
No, they're not well-known because...
Yes.
They're just not in the public eye because they haven't had some scandal where they've had an affair or run off with a rent boy.
Well, no one's having sex anymore, haven't you read?
No, I have heard that, apart from sort of many politicians at the moment.
Right.
They all are.
Well, good for them. Yeah. Someone's got to.
Yeah, I know. And they're running the country.
Well, keep watching. All right, Sam.
I shall not.
Keep your eyes peeled and one day you never know, you may laugh.
I do laugh.
Call us back if it ever happens, all right.
Sure.
Is Temple Fortune. Nigel.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Well, I'm glad I know that the 93% of the other women. And I'm glad I'm one of the 6% of the men.
Who aren't having sex?
No, who's active, who's having sex, of course, because you said 7% of the women weren't and 6% of the men weren't either.
Yes, that's right.
So I'm lucky that I'm still active, thank God.
Well, that's what you say, Nigel. It's a fantastical story, and many would believe you, but...
I'd have to get some references emailed in. But I rang you about Tennessee Power Station.
Yes.
I did a story there the other day, a block of flats called Chelsea Bridge Wharf. It's a huge development of flats. I don't know, you must have driven past.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
Is that the block that's purple and pink?
I think part of it, no. I think it is it? I can't remember.
There's a block of flats.
Over Chelsea Bridge.
There's a block of flats right next to Battersea Power Station, just over the railway lines. That's purple and pink.
It may be from one side. That's what I haven't seen. But what?
Hideous.
It's a huge development of different blocks with underground parking.
Yeah, they all are, all the way along the river, and they're all exactly the same. None of them got any cupboards, and none of them got any space.
Yeah, they are small, but interestingly enough, there's some low-key social housing there, and of course there's some very expensive housing. But I did some pictures looking over Battersea Power Station from one of the blocks, and what's interesting is what you don't see really from the ground is it's a filthy, dirty old site all around the actual structure still, because the structure could do with being cleaned up and having something done with it, but all the actual sort of surrounding land is just decaying. It's got old railway sleepers and
dirt. It's a building site.
Awful. It's a shame, and it's a shame it has, you know, nothing's been done with it, because, of course, the actual consortium bought it. Their development plan sort of died off about a month ago, didn't they?
Yeah, believe me, someone will put up exactly the same kind of executive flatlets that are line the river from Kew down to what do they call it, the Docklands.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all exactly the same. None of them, they're completely featureless and vastly expensive, and like I've said, on other shows that I've done before, they don't contribute to the area that they're in at all. They look like little islands of executive renters that, it's just weird that the councils have allowed them to go up. Because they're just...
Yeah, very, 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 very dumb.
They're soulless.
Exactly. I saw something on TV which is really funny last night. I don't know if you ever watched Chris Tarrant's show. He does all these adverts from around the world, doesn't he?
Oh.
But there was something that was really, really funny on it. It really made me roar out loud. It had a... had a scene where a girl had to come in and had two very sort of two male models sitting down in suits who were wearing different lip balm, you see, and you can imagine what's going to happen next.
No.
And she had, they applied the lip balm to these two guys. She had to kiss the guy to see if she could tell which was a different type of lip balm. Of course, what they did is, when they blindfolded her, they swapped the two male models for two chimpanzees. And when it was so funny, because when she kissed these chimpanzees were really into it. It was quite hysterical when they took the mask off.
Well, I think we'll draw a veil over that. But that was a foreign advert, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't that perfectly illustrate what I've just been saying? To get a laugh on British TV, you've got to watch foreign advertising.
Well, but there's still some funny stuff on TV, isn't there?
Well, go on then.
Is it? I think some of the old stuff on TV is great that they bring back. The Python stuff is great from years ago.
Well, I don't know. I'd have to raise a finger of complaint there as well. And I think Helen is raising an eyebrow as well. Some of the Python stuff, the ones that you know, that you and I could probably sit down and bore each other rigid with reciting word for word, that is funny. Yeah.
But Peter Kay, I thought, was quite funny with his...
But if you watch a whole episode of Monty Python... You'll find that 90% of it, you just sit there and you go, yes.
Do you like Sacha Baron Cohen?
Yes. A qualified yes.
Yeah, I thought some of his stuff that he does was...
I stopped watching the, what's that tracksuited thing that he does?
Oh, yeah, the one where was it Ali G?
Ali G, yeah. I stopped watching that because it's just... I don't know, it's the same reason that I stopped watching that guy who used to dress up in bunny suits and attack pensioners.
Yeah.
It just became a little bit cruel, you know?
But I think I think humour here is gone very much to sort of having social humour, isn't it? We've sort of interacted with sort of taking the mickey out of the public. All these sort of reality shows and sort of standing in the street and pretending to sort of be static and suddenly touch someone. It's all going that way, isn't it? All these sort of silly shows on TV.
But you know what is coming back that I do used to find properly funny was the Caroline Quentin show, which was the where they all sat down and watched TV. What was that called? The Royal Family.
Oh, the Royal Family. Yeah,
I'll put out the bunting when that comes back. Yeah,
that was good. And I quite like the American sitcom Everybody Loves Raymond's quite a good show.
Oh, come off it, Nigel. Now you've completely lost me. I thought you were going to say something better than that. But anyway, I've got to go. All right.
Have a good day, mate.
Ta-ta. Cheers. American shows are great because they normally have, you know, 56 different writers on, where an English show is just one guy with a typewriter in a damp bedsit.
When one thinks of designer names...
London's LBC 97.3.
0870-9090-973.
Nick Abbott.
Well, let's get back to it.
Sadie Frost got burgled just before Jude Law's film comes out about a spate of burglaries around London. That sounds very suspicious. Who is Sadie Frost, by the way? The paper's full of people, and I feel like I'm 1,000 years old now, because I don't know who anyone is anymore. I mean, you go through the rabid tabloids, you open The Sun, and it's, oh, this person is having sex with that person, and these are the only people that are actually doing it, the people who appear in the news. And that's why the tabloids report it, because it's so stunning that anyone's actually doing it anymore, and they're only celebrities. We've become a nation where only celebrities are allowed to, have hot all-night sessions in their steamy love nests. What was that, Helen?
Sorry, I shouted, have sex.
Yeah. I was trying to, skirt around.
I know.
But you blurted it out.
Sorry.
You couldn't help yourself. Yeah.
Just shouting.
Who's Sadie Frost?
She was married to Jude Law.
Right, see, that's not who she is. That's who her husband is.
Yeah. That's a good point.
That's how I know her.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I've never met her. I've seen her on...
So is that all she is? She's somebody's wife? Or ex-wife? Or... Somebody that someone used
says
to be...
Says an actress here on my bit of paper.
...installed in their steamy love nest. She's an actress.
Well, it says that here. I don't know what she's been in.
Oh, well, if it's written down, then it must be true. Here's one in Thamesmead. Hello, Bob.
Good evening, Nick. Great to hear you again, if you don't mind me saying.
I don't.
Thank you. Who's Sadie Frost?
Yeah.
Who's Jude Law? but anyway, Nick, I heard you talking about sex earlier, and I thought I'd just call in, you know, because my missus worked me over, yeah?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I can't go into too many details on air, but basically, she flushed me out.
Right.
And that was after, you know, a quarter of a century. I mean, we did the silver wedding thing and all that. And,
what did you get her?
Nothing.
Well, there I think we found the problem.
But it was all gone by then, Nick. That was the problem. But the thing is, to cut to the bottom line, I'm not getting any, and it don't worry me. Because I'm off women for life. I've certainly vowed, you know, these people who get married and mess up and one thing and another and then go and do it again, well, I can't get my head around that at all, you know.
Yeah, once bitten, twice shy, eh?
Absolutely, mate. I just thought I'd throw that into the pot. And plus, I love talking to you, Nick. But you were asking, what's funny on television? Can I say something?
Well, you can throw it in, why not?
Throw it in. South Park.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
Correct.
Do you know what they've done recently? It's a bit naughty, but I've got a feeling the guy would appreciate it. It's
Steve Irwin.
Yeah, Steve Irwin. But, you know, I mean, South Park do everything. You know, they've done 2 days before the day after tomorrow, which I thought was just magnificent, you know. And they've also done the spoof on the conspiracy theorist nuts, because these guys don't have a position. You know, it's not as if they're coming from the right or the left. They hate Jews or Muslims or Christians or...
They hate everyone.
Anyone.
Yeah.
Well, I think they probably love everyone, Nick. That's my view.
I don't know.
You know, with a few notable exceptions, of course, like, well, maybe we'd better not mention names. But, you know, they're so on the ball, those guys. I watch it every Friday and Saturday night, you know. It's on.
And they continue to be funny no matter how many times you see them. Yeah. Isn't it a shame that all the funny stuff on British television is American?
Yeah, that's...
Much like all of the quality programs on British television are American. You know, there's CSI things, and there's Green Wing, and there's The Sopranos, and then the half-hour sitcoms. All of the drama is the best, and all of the comedies are the best, and we send them celebrity dancing and, you know, Big Brother celebrity knitting or whatever it is.
Isn't that pathetic, Nick?
Yes, it is.
Isn't that pathetic? You know, I heard, I mean, I won't say it, but I heard a radio presenter say recently that The X Factor is such a wonderful show, for example.
Yeah.
The X Factor. I mean, it's the zilch factor as far as I'm concerned. Because I say my daughter insists on watching it at the weekend, you know.
It is oddly gripping.
Well, it's compulsive to the point that I have to watch it because she's there and I'm there. And the deal is, unless there's like a classic movie on, like The Godfather, then we got to stay with it. And I say to her, I argue with her through the whole thing, and I say, look, what we're saying here is this this poor woman in the wheelchair, Nick. I mean, personally, I feel sorry for the girl because she's not going to fill the Earl's Court.
No.
Or the button bend down at the corner. I mean, people
But you know what?
Not.
None of them are. The only reason you watch
None
that...
None of them are.
The
that.
Only reason that you or anybody else watches that program is because Simon Cowell is rude to them. That's the only reason.
Well,
no one would leave their chair to go and see any of those people sing. No one would part with a penny in order to go into a concert to see them sing, unless they've lost their minds.
There's a bit of truth in that, but do you know what? I think Simon Cowell's psychophancy outweighs his rudeness. He's not rude enough, in my opinion. And if he was genuine, well, there wouldn't be a show, would there?
No.
Because these punters would walk in. I mean, I know my music in that I've seen people play. I mean, all kinds of people. Loudon, Wainwright, Sabbath, The Floyd. And if you tell me this guy can play, then I'll say, well, yeah, he can, even if I don't like the music.
That was a really weird list. Loudon, Wainwright, Sabbath,
The
Floyd.
I saw Loudon, yeah.
Groovy.
I saw Loudon. He was top wrong. He's absolutely top drawer, old Loudon.
But I wouldn't have put him in with Sabbath and Pink Floyd. That's just a really strange list.
It's just a list of people I saw. I mean, I saw Hot Chocolate, and they were tight as a drum, you know? They were just brilliant. They can play. I saw early Quo before they went rocking all over the world.
Well, you know what? There's nothing wrong with a bit of status quo. Heads down, no nonsense, mindless boogie. I love it.
Early Quo were very heavy. Yeah. You know, I'm talking, what am I talking? Early 70s. I mean, they were really rocking, you know. Top drawer, Uriah Heep, early Uriah Heep.
They're still rocking. They're rocking all over the world.
No, but they have kind of lost it. You know, they went the commercial route, and that was the end.
Well, it was the same song over and over and over again. Fortunately for them, it was a really great song. Yeah.
That's it.
Anyway, thanks a lot, Bob.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you, mate.
Carry on not having sex without compliments, all right?
I will. Take care, mate.
Be proud to be British. Here's one in Queen's Park. Mark.
Hi, Nick.
Mark.
Hi, what I would say is that the only things that are funny is things like Fawlty Towers and things like Dad's Army back in 1780.
30 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just gone downhill.
Anything current? I mean, you can't possibly have been around when they first came out.
I just watch the repeats or get them off the internet.
Yeah.
That's all I do. I don't.
But you seem like you'd be right up the street of people like Little Britain. You know all those catchphrase comedies?
Yeah, I watch it sometimes, but then sometimes it's just terrible, like the things they do.
Right. And you're the ideal demographic. And if you're giving them the thumbs down, well, that's not much of a... That's not much of, you're not painting them in a good light.
No. And also, I just saw on the ads that Richard Hammond has brought out an annual, it's called.
Oh, is this a joke?
No.
Go on, lay it on me.
Like, he's saying, how the crash has affected him already.
Oh, it's not a joke?
No.
Oh, do you have a joke about Richard Hammond?
No.
No, good. All right. He's brought out an annual. What do you mean, an annual?
I don't know, an annual. Like, he's said it must come out every year about him.
Well, he's planning on one of these every year, is he?
Yeah.
Well, he's done his career no end of good. All right, thanks for the bad news, Mark.
And there's one other thing as well.
And,
how can you say never mind the Buzzcocks is funny?
I don't know. That seems really bizarre.
Yeah.
I didn't even know it was a comedy show.
That must have been the joke about it.
I suppose so, yeah. That's where the comedy came in, yeah. All right, thanks, Mark.
Okay, bye.
Ta-da. Richard Hammond was back on the road again last night, just 5 weeks after defying death in a 280-mile-an-hour crash. You know what? The tabloids, sometimes they really surprise me. They've decided that Richard Hammond is a saint walking amongst us. They've also, bizarrely, lately decided that Posh Spice is someone to be worshipped. She's in the Sun virtually every other day. Like, she's got a full-page spread of positivity. Whereas, not long ago, they used to be digging a large hole and burying her in it. Posh Spice. Well, she hasn't done anything differently. She's still... I don't know, what does she do? She shops. She shops and gets a photograph taken coming out of restaurants with her lips apart. You've never seen a photograph of Posh Spice with her mouth closed. Have you? Think hard. She's decided that with her lips apart, her cheekbones show more, and she looks more, what, thin? Glamorous? Vacant? One of the above.
Massive sale at Carbix.
London's LBC 97.3.
0870 90 90 973.
Nick Abbott. Oh, right, yeah.
And I noticed that no one has called in to support Richard Hammond. Everyone's calling in, oh, isn't it dreadful that I'm saying nasty things about Jim or Fix It, because he's coming back. And Noel is coming back for a super one-off edition of Multicolour Swap Shop, although I only have that on the authority of that nice lady that called in. But, could it get more painful? Chris Tarrant will be doing Tiswas next. But not one single person, unless you were going to correct me, Chris, has called in to support Richard Hammond.
No, but we haven't reached the end of the show yet.
Right.
There's still time.
This is today's Richard Hammond update from The Sun, and there's barely been a day since he had that accident. And you know why he had that accident? Because he's a TV presenter and he was going at 300 miles an hour.
Of course.
Yeah. He's not a high-speed driver.
Didn't help you.
Yeah,
himself.
That's the reason why. Yeah. It was just a stupid stunt. Richard is said to be thrilled at the support from the public and neighbours, it says in The Sun. One neighbour said, all locals can't wait to see him and buy him a drink. He'll never have to buy another beer round here. And it's true that the tabloids have elevated. This was even in the Telegraph today, a picture of Richard Hammond. Now he's a saint walking among us. And I'm just really confused, because before he had the crash, he was the unfunny, irritating one on Top Gear, and he did some really dire show on Sky One called Brainiac, right, which didn't trouble the ratings one bit. And every time, like I said before, every time that he did one of those car tests on Top Gear, which is a great programme, I love it, mostly because Jeremy Clarkson's funny, every time he did one of those tests where he'd go in and drive a car around a corner sideways, you'd think, oh, I wish they'd given it to Jeremy Clarkson, because it might have actually been amusing, instead of him just being cutesy cute. Am I right?
Hammy.
Hammy. That's perfect, yeah.
But that's what they're calling him.
He's Hammy.
Hammy.
Yeah, Hammy by name and Hammy by nature. Yeah. Here's Harrow. Harrow, Paul.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm all right.
I thought one of your earlier callers drove me very close to self-harming when talking about Jim Will Fix It. Like a more boring programme I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
As for Richard Hammond, I had no idea who he was until my breakfast was disturbed on Sky News with someone telling me he'd had a car crash.
Right.
And as
they didn't disturb your breakfast, by the way, with any of the 10 people who died on the roads that day. Just just a bland TV presenter who'd had an accident, yeah.
Absolutely. And now, you mentioned earlier about Posh Spice having a newspaper double-page spread about positivity.
Every single day lately in The Sun, they've been just fawning over the woman. I don't get it, because long ago, they hated her.
Yes, but the press liked to build someone up, then destroy them, as they did. Noel Edmonds apparently had a double-page spread in the Mail about positivity, which is a bit of a contradiction in terms, considering his third wife has just left him, but nevertheless...
maybe he wished that on the cosmos.
Yeah. He may well have done, but it's a disturbing thought to think they may resurrect Multicoloured Swap Shop.
Really weird, yeah, bizarre. Like, they really have run out of ideas in TV, haven't they? They've just thrown up their hands and say, right, that's it, we give up. Has anyone got a copy of the Radio Times from 1973?
Well, sadly, yes, and I think your comments earlier about what makes you laugh out loud, comedy's very subjective. Lots of people think that Little Britain is absolutely hysterical.
Yeah.
They'll think that...
There's one that leaves me stony-faced, I'm afraid. I don't get it.
Well, same here. The only programme that makes me laugh out loud at the moment, and it is, as I say, comedy is subjective, so it's personal taste, Scrubs makes me laugh out loud.
Yes.
It just, you know, some of the scenes and some of the lines, and
but that's another American programme, of course.
Well, sadly, but the Americans have got the recipe right. Instead of having a couple of writers, they have dozens of them.
They do, yeah, because a series in America lasts for 24 episodes. Half a year a programme runs in America, whereas in this country it's six. That's as much as they can squeeze out.
And really,
even if you're a supposed comic genius like Ricky Gervais, you can't even make six funny.
Ricky Gervais is clever, but he's not a comic genius.
I wouldn't say so, no. Not on the current evidence.
No, and American sitcoms or American comedy has been consistently good. I mean, the last 25 years they've produced things like Cheers, which I thought was very, very well written.
Yeah, I love Cheers.
MASH was incredibly well written and
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, Friends was, even if you thought it was, you know, bland and everyone just looked, you know, beige and it was all a bit...
Yeah,
it was funny. Every 30 seconds there was a laugh line. Yeah,
and I think the only other program that makes me laugh out loud in the same manner, I'm afraid, is The Simpsons. I think that's incredibly well written.
Of course, sometimes it's a bit syrupy and a bit goopy, but then, you know, after a couple of minutes, you can tell if it's one of those episodes, and you can just stop watching it. But often it'll be the funniest thing on that day. Yeah,
yeah,
all American, unfortunately.
Well, we have had our moments. I think Yes, Prime Minister was superbly written.
Oh, yeah, that's
very
right.
Very accurate.
I haven't thought about that in a good long while. Yes, it was.
And the sad thing is, to watch an episode today, it would still reflect the modern face of politics
yeah,
in the country.
Yeah, nothing's changed, no.
No, sadly. But maybe some positivity from Posh and Noel Edmonds may inspire some writers.
Well, I suppose so. Let's look on the bright side of life, eh?
Absolutely.
Cheers, Paul.
Thanks, Kev.
Ta-da. This is LBC.
More champagne, dear?
What? Abbott.
Yeah.
It's Aid who... I don't know, Aid. Can you get laid?
No, actually not.
Well, then you can join everyone else in this country. Doesn't that make you feel warm inside?
But,
no one's getting any.
Hey, they're the encouraging finger face transplants, didn't they?
Put your name on the list, mate.
Yeah. There's a supermarket open this week, like a famous chain, and it was in the paper that somebody had queued 4 hours just to be the first customer.
Somebody had queued to go into a supermarket? What, were they giving stuff away?
No, they just wanted to be the first customer.
Right.
That seems stupid.
Yeah, that's one word for it.
Five in the morning.
I'm not sure stupid is quite strong enough, but we'll go with that one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just avoid I avoid going out if I can. And queues. If, you know, queues are just... Why would you want to go... I mean, like, sales even, like, you know, January sales. People queue all night. Like, picture sleeping bag, don't they?
Well, yeah, people... I don't know whether they still do or not. People used to queue outside the Top People's store... Horrids all night long to go in and get I don't know what would they get. They would get like a freezer for threepence halfpenny, but I don't know. That's and they'd plan their route in the store as well. But they queued outside a supermarket
just to be the first customer. Yeah,
that's that defies explanation. Did the news people go and ask them why?
No, they didn't actually. Thought that would be the one first. Things that they do, but...
Yeah, that would be the amusing end, the and finally story on the news. You thought you'd heard it all, but... was it a bloke or a woman?
It was a bloke.
Right. I knew it would be, yeah.
So how did you know that?
Well, blokes just like... I don't know, they like that sort of stuff. It's almost the same thing that propels them to make lists of things. They want to be first and... Well, I don't know. I mean, as though there would be any proof that they had been first. They'd keep their till receipt.
Yeah.
And stick it next to their stamp collection.
It's like the mentality of... Well, I don't think women do it that much. It's a set of traffic lights.
Eh?
A set of lights. Like you're saying, want to be first. Like, a set of traffic lights. Men always want to be in front, get first. Get to show the other people blow cut, don't they?
I don't know.
You've never found that? It's probably just a thing around that.
If there's two lanes, you mean, and there's a car in one lane and the traffic lights are at red, they won't sit behind the car that's waiting at red. They'll go into the other lane so that so that they knock a couple of seconds off their journey time. Yeah, and that's part of what road rage is all about. I mean, people go insane if you impede them in any way, as though to they'll arrive at their destination 10 seconds later than they already would have done, and they're prepared to kill you for it. Yeah.
I mean, if somebody went past you in the street, you wouldn't go running after them, would you?
That's exactly right. Yeah, if somebody cut you up as a pedestrian on the pavement, yeah, you wouldn't do your nut and reach for a tire iron. No.
Yeah, because you'd probably end up dead for one thing.
Well, that's right, but you'd be equally dead in a car. It's just it's as though we surround ourselves. We like to surround ourselves in a little bubble. This is why people don't like looking at each other on the tube, because it impinges on your personal space.
Yeah.
But in a car, your personal space is surrounded by metal, and it's almost as though. But it's almost as though the metal of the car isn't enough now. Now that you've got a shell around you, it's the space around the shell is yours as well. And so if anybody does cut you up, it's almost as though being in a car makes your brain boil.
Yeah.
Really weird. Never get in a car, Aid.
No, I'll try not to. Hey, you can have that on the tube, though, can't you? Instead of adverts, don't you look at me.
Yeah, like I said before, that's the only reason why people buy the Evening Standard, so that they don't have to look at their fellow passengers. 50p, please.
On London's LBC 97.3.
Hello!
0870-9090-973.
Nick Abbott.
Well, let's get back to it.
So I saw this on the exciting BBC Breakfast News this morning, that Patricia Hewitt, is that right, is going to be suggesting they put tax on Alco Pops. Is it Patricia Hewitt? I forget. They come and go, and, you know, they all look the same. They're all sort of like blah, blah, blah. And
she's a politician.
Goes in one ear and out the other, and occasionally they'll say something in between filling out their expenses, you know. And This time she was slapped down by Gordon Brown, and she said, oh, yes, I will. And he said, oh, no, you won't. And, you know, nothing will ever happen. But they're trying to stop kids drinking, right? And they
again.
They yeah, and it's going to have no effect at all putting a tax on Alco Pops, because it's considered cool to be drunk. Uniquely in this country, I think. And Helen, you are riding that fader. You should be a DJ. Hey. It's weird, you know, you go to Holland, and the only people wandering around the streets drunk and stoned are British tourists. Dutch people will tut at you, because it's considered not the done thing. Just like getting pregnant at 14 is considered not the done thing in Holland. That's just us. It's just us that think that, you know, if you're a kid, you should be drunk, because it's hard. Just like you shouldn't pay attention in school, because that's hard as well. Sit at the back, flicking ink bombs, or whatever the current equivalent is. Knives, I think.
Isn't it safe now instead of hard?
I've got no idea. Having been a teenager a very long time ago, I think it's illin.
Oh, okay. We're both wrong, right?
Yeah, must be, yeah. But that's the reason why it's not going to work, is because it's considered safe, illin, hard, or whatever it is you might want to come up with. And that will never change, doesn't matter how much money you put on Alco Pops. You put money on Alco Pops, and they'll just choose something else. Cider, or beer, or wine, or, you know, glue. Whatever it is that comes to hand. You know, it will make no difference at all. It's the culture. That's the problem. Here's one in Sevenoaks. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Nick.
Nick.
I called up to talk about the sex survey, mainly, but...
All right, if you weren't listening before, here's the summation. No one is having sex anymore. The official, Office for National Statistics says so.
Well, the ones that you gave out, I think they're probably slightly exaggerated, because everyone's always exaggerated. I suspect it's probably lower than the figures state.
Even worse,
yes,
or better, depending on your point of view.
I think less. I think in the 16 to 19 year age group, remembering a long way back when I was in that age group, trying to find any sex was near enough impossible for most boys.
Even though that's all you thought about.
Sorry?
Even though you could think about precious little else.
I couldn't think of anything else, just couldn't get it. And in fact, Ian Lee said something a week or two back that I thought was interesting. He happened to say, a throwaway comment he said to somebody was, when I was 17 and I wanted it, I couldn't get it. Now I'm 33, frankly, I can't be bothered. And it made me think, yes.
Right, but there seems to be a gap in that.
Sorry?
When he was 17, he wanted it, but he couldn't get it.
That's right.
And now he can't be bothered. See, there's a gap in that sentence. Did you spot it?
No, go on then.
Well, it should be. When I was 17, I wanted it, but I couldn't get it. And now I'm 37, it's all over me, but I don't want it anymore. It's the it's all over me part that he missed out.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then, of course, when we're going into the older age group, we're talking about people who are married.
Well, they're definitely not getting it.
No, well, that's right. I mean, a lot of the women are quite rightly completely knackered with doing housework, with holding a job, with children. And, you know, most of them complain that they've just got no energy left at all after about 8 o'clock in the evening. So, obviously, they're not going to be bothered, are they? Their husbands are off with funny interests that they consider a bit of a waste of time, but it keeps them busy and off the streets. And, generally speaking, I would have thought that the figures are probably worse, to be quite honest with you.
Well, you know what, you might have something there, because, as you say, well, men overestimate or overstate the amount of sex they're getting, and women understate it, because it seems more demure.
Yes.
But the figures that they came out with, so let's increase them just slightly.
And for most of the women there, of whatever age group, if they're not married, they're all basically looking for the same kind of men. A very small number of men.
Billionaires.
Six-packs, money and prospects. So
I don't know about six-packs. I'm not sure the six-pack's true. I think women go for, traditionally, someone who can play the role of protector. Now, when we used to live in caves, it used to be a guy with enormously square shoulders. These days, it's a guy who, you know, has a huge bank account.
So not 16 to 19. I think they still quite like the six-pack and a bit of long hair does it for them.
Right.
So
anything that their parents don't like, I think. Yeah.
You're right, yeah. And their mothers were the same. They went off with the wrong men. And then when their mothers, they tell their daughters that... you should go with a banker or a stockbroker because he's a much better bet.
But the statistics say 40%, so let's increase it a little bit to allow for misrepresentation. Let's say 50% of people between 16 and 19 had no sex at all in the last year.
Doesn't surprise me, because 10% of the boys will be having sex all the time and 90% are struggling to find it.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
The girls
there,
are looking for the same men, so, or boys at that age. So they're queuing up, waiting in line, and in some cases happy enough to share. I know what I'm saying isn't popular with a lot of women, but a lot of young women would rather share someone who is, to their peer group, is really eligible. Than
and they'll be the guys in the back of the class who are throwing around spit bombs, yeah.
Yeah.
They won't be the guy at the front with the glasses who can answer all the questions in maths, no.
He's a loyal one. He'll be devoted like a puppy dog, but they don't want him.
Exactly.
They'd rather wait for the one that's the rowdy one that's that everybody wants, because obviously you go off with the one with the glasses, what do your mates say? They say, good Lord, what are you doing, girl?
You've got something there, Nick.
So 90% or 80% of women want 10% of the men, and they'll wait their turn. So I think those few men are probably, if they were surveyed, they'll say... I had it every night last year.
Yeah, they'd probably be asleep when the surveyor called.
Probably, yeah.
All right, thanks a lot, Nick.
Thanks very much.
Talking about dogs, by the way, this is, Barney, which is an excellent name for a pet. Barney, the Springer Spaniel, has undergone surgery to remove sticks and stones from his stomach after owners heard him rattling. Oh. Are we touched by animal stories?
No.
I've got two. Oh, come on. You're not touched by animal stories?
No.
Helen?
No.
What if I read on? Are you prepared to listen with an open mind?
I've got an open heart.
No.
Here you go.
The family pet wolfed down the items, sticks and stones, while playing fetch. But 8-year-old Olivia and her father, Andrew, didn't realise why the sticks, stones and crab apples that they threw weren't being returned. So they'd throw a stone. Why would you throw a stone for a dog, by the way? I mean, I'm calling the RSPCA. So they threw a stone and the dog, faithfully charged off after it and came back empty-mouthed because it was swallowing them. Now that is a stupid dog. It was only when Barney began to rattle while being taken for walks that they realised that something might be wrong and took him to a vet where he was x-rayed. The vet operated and we found all these things inside him. It was incredible. Now we have to have the little dog has to wear a muzzle. Oh. The sheer amount of stones inside him shocked everyone. Barney was very lucky. Barney was very stupid. Here's one in Wallington. Hey, Funka.
Funka.
Can you hang on a minute?
Yeah.
I'll be right back. This is LBC. The Chevrolet Matiz is... Funke.
Yes.
Funka.
Funke. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that because you were... I was listening to you talking about Eric and... Wise and whatever the guys... Morecambe and Wise.
Yeah.
And I used to watch them when I was growing up and I thought they were really funny.
Yeah, used to, yeah.
Well, yeah, but, you know, one of them's dead now, isn't he? Or, you know...
I thought they were really good.
I think he's still dead,
yeah.
Sorry?
They used to be really good, yeah. Past tense. Used to be, yeah.
Well, I thought they were really funny. They used to really make me feel really nice and warm.
Well, exactly, yeah. Not laugh out loud, just like Dad's Army. It made you feel warm inside to spend some time in their company. But it wasn't actually falling off the chair hilariously funny. Be honest.
Yeah, well, but then is the point of humour that you have to laugh out loud?
Yes.
Who said that?
I did just now. That's humour. That's comedy. Laughing. That differentiates a comedy from a drama. Laughter.
Right, okay. Well, I thought that was funny. I mean, one thing I think is quite funny now, although it stopped, is Frasier.
Yeah, you're right.
Which is American. I really think that is laugh out loud funny.
Very well written, yeah.
Very well written, but sometimes they have moments where it's just gentle comedy... that makes you smile, because you can't be laughing out loud every minute.
No, because that would be exhausting.
It's, you know, slightly mad.
But
and
as long as you laugh, oh, I don't know, let's pluck a figure out of the air, 6 times in half an hour, then it's funny. But if all you can do in half an hour is smile, like the extras program, then, you know, I'd have to raise a finger of complaint.
Well, there's one program that was on, actually, I don't know the name of it, but it used to have that Irish comic on it, and he was like a spaceman, or he was from another planet or something. He was from another planet, and he was married to some girl who was a normal girl. Do you know this show?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
But that was funny, but now I think they've got another guy doing, because he's gone off now.
Oh,
and
good.
They've got another guy doing his role. It's no longer funny.
I'm distraught, or glad to hear it, whichever is appropriate.
Yeah, but I thought that was funny.
All right, thanks, Funke.
No problem.
What's your name?
Funke.
Okay. Yeah. Cheers. I don't know, there's just something groovy about that.
Groovy.
Or...
Yowza.
Yeah, Funke, yowza. Here's Hackney. Oh, Len.
Oh, hi, Nick.
Len.
Nick, why are they putting Jimmy Savile back on TV?
I don't know. If you missed this earlier on, here's the bad news. 12 years after he lost... I thought it was longer ago than this. 12 years after he last fixed it, Jimmy Savile is returning to his big leather armchair for a new series of Jimmel Fix It.
How bad is that?
Awful.
Who's going to watch that?
I've got no idea. People who watch UK TV Gold, whoever they are.
On that dreadful dancing programme on a Saturday, and you see Bruce Forsyth, who looks like he's had the makeup sandblasted onto his face, standing there at a waxwork.
He sat by me when I went to the, as he said, theatre. He said, this is a nice theatre, isn't it? And I was like, theatre? Who says that? But he didn't. He just kept talking all the way through this thing. I thought, Brucey, come on, mate. Have you not been to the theatre before? Shut up.
I mean, what have they got now? They've got Noel Edmonds in the afternoon with that rubbish Deal or No Deal.
Yeah, that still mystifies me. I don't get that show.
No. They've got Les Dennis coming back.
Oh...
They've got Bruce Forsyth, now they've got Jimmy Savile. What next?
All our yesterdays.
Oh, do you know, the only programmes that I find quite funny now are Kath and Kim.
Australian.
Yeah. And Curb Your Enthusiasm.
American.
Yeah.
It's almost as though we've lost the ability to be funny in this country.
There are no British sitcoms that I watch now. If I watch the first sort of one, I'll probably end up switching it off halfway.
Yeah, after about 5 minutes, when you realise, oh, God, it's another one of these.
Yeah.
I was about to say we've lost the ability to do drama as well, because Americans are sending all the best drama. But then I thought, you know what, the best thing, including The Sopranos, the best thing I've seen this year was on ITV. Can you believe it? That would have been the last channel you'd choose, Prime Suspect.
All
that
right.
was great.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very good.
So there is hope. We can actually do TV.
I find myself watching documentaries now more than anything else.
A lot of the best things are, like that Coast thing, they just started to repeat that.
Awesome.
They're doing the Planet Earth, you know, that David Attenborough whispering all the way through it like that. Yep, brilliant.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what we do now. Nature.
Yeah.
We haven't got any of it ourselves.
No.
Mind you, the best story this week was about nature in the raw. Did you see that picture of the pelican eating the pigeon?
No.
Oh, man, did you miss out? Rush out and buy a newspaper. It might still be in it. All right.
Today, is it?
The story was in a park in central London, in St. James Park, an eastern white pelican, which originates from northern Russia, was seen eating a pigeon. A pelican. This is a bird that flaps around through the sky and then dives into the water and scoops up a huge mouthful.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a mouth, it's a bill. Yeah. A bill full of water, which may or may not include fish. And then, somehow, with all of that weight on the front of its face, then lifts off and swallows the fish, but not the water, or something of that order, right? Seems like an enormous thing to go through just to get a meal.
That was a bit.
But they're just standing around, minding its own affairs, and they must have thought, why go through all of that? I mean, all of that flapping and diving and swallowing and expelling of the water when I could just eat one of those things that it's just wandering. In fact, it will wander right up to it.
Yeah.
Because pigeons have no fear, do they? Unless you actually charge one, then it won't go. It won't launch into flight. It'll just scuttle out the way.
Well, they always get out of the way just before you get to kick them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You'll never catch one in your car. No. Yeah. But for another bird, it must have thought, I wonder what that's like. And it just scooped one up. And fortunately for us, a press association photographer was standing right by it. And I bet that the guy couldn't believe his luck. Because this will be the picture of the year, I guarantee it. And it's a close-up of a pelican with a pigeon. And it's just opening its mouth just a little bit so that you can see the pigeon's little face inside. Yeah. Oh, Helen. Oh. Hmm?
Oh, no, I like that story.
And the pigeon must be thinking, what the... I'm just standing here, minding my own affairs, you know, just trying out cigarette butts to see if they're bred. And suddenly I'm fighting for my life inside a pelican's bill. Huh?
A pelican in this country?
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Oh, wait, are they?
Aren't they?
I don't know.
I think they have them in St. James Park, don't they?
Okay.
In order to further en-beautify the
Queen's
Park.
Yes, I've seen them now.
Royal pelicans.
Oh, yeah, they must be, yeah. A close relative to the royal swan. You know why swans are royal?
Oh.
It's because they wanted to eat all of them.
Oh.
Mm. That's true.
Oh, I thought it was a joke.
No, that's why you that's why you can't kill a swan. It's because it's for the royal plate.
Mm. You go to jail for...
Apparently so, yeah.
Wow.
Without dinner.
All right, that's my weekend over.
It was a 20-minute struggle, apparently, to get this pigeon to go down its throat, but eventually it managed it. It was, you know, tossing it inside its little bill there, and eventually the pigeon went down head first, flapping and struggling all the way. That's the kind of story you like about nature, isn't it, Helen?
Yes.
An RSPB spokesman said it's almost unheard of for a pelican to eat a bird. Their diet is normally strictly fish. That is one crazy bird. Here's one in East Ham. Verinda.
Hello. I'm actually quite looking forward for Jimmy Savile to come back because I used to watch him when I was younger.
And it's made you the man you are today. Everyone's thrilled. He made it. Ian's going to be back on Sunday night. If the plane gets back in time.
When was the last time you recalled a